Scaredy Cats, picture it, summer 1993. A teenage girl takes her two younger brothers to see the movie that everyone is talking about. As the movie ends and the credits roll, that girl's joy and awe at what she has just seen fades when she turns to see her youngest brother, then only eight, curled up in his seat, making himself as small as he can possibly be, hands over his ears. The thought that passes through her head, my parents are going to kill me. That dissipates when the brother slowly turns his head, taking his hands away from his ears, and asks, can we see that again? In case you haven't already guessed, that super cool big sister was me, and that movie was Jurassic Park.
There it is. Welcome to Jurassic Park.
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
The most phenomenal discovery of our time.
How'd you do this?
Becomes the greatest adventure of all time.
Can I touch it?
Sure.
Universal Pictures presents.
You feel that?
Hold on to your butts.
A Steven Spielberg film.
Fences are failing all over the park.
Yeah, that's nice. Gotta go.
An adventure.
Look out! Go!
I can't get Jurassic Park back online.
65 million years in the making. Jurassic Park.
So coming along for this thrill ride are our return guests, Matt and Katie, and scaredy cat newbie, Taylor. Hey, folks, how are you today?
Doing well. You did another boot. You did another Canadian boot there.
Oh my God.
I can't help it, okay?
Talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Sorry, I'm just going to take a sip of my maple syrup here.
Were you playing hockey? Is that why you were late?
Yes, I was.
She was just on the rink. Give her a break.
Yeah, exactly. So, Taylor, since you're new, you get subjected to the Scaredy Cat 5. Are you ready?
Bring it on.
All right. So, what is your favorite subgenre of horror?
I would probably. Oh, this should be an easy question, but I feel like, you know what? I would probably say supernatural. Like, my favorite movie of all time is probably, like, The Ring. So, like, anything along those vibes, I feel like, are generally going to be what I do. I know they're not... I mean, they're fine, kind of fun, but, like, the Conjuring movies are great. So, like, a good possession movie is kind of up my alley. But, like, yeah, I would say supernatural, possession, those kinds of things. I don't necessarily... Slashers are fun, but they're not something I gravitate towards too often. And I don't really know... Like, I haven't really seen many of the big ones, so... Yeah.
Like, what would you consider the big slashers?
Oh, like, you know, like the Freddy movies, the Jason movies.
No, okay, yeah.
Like those.
So, like the 80s heyday of horror.
Literally the 80s heyday. I've seen some of them, but not enough to, like, coherently talk about them. Mm. I mean, the Scream movies are great, but they're kind of almost, I don't say parody of a slasher, but, you know.
Well, they became a parody of themselves.
Scream is everything.
What is, okay, you already may have answered this, but I'm going to ask anyways. What's your favorite horror movie?
Oh, The Ring, hands down. I can quote that movie beginning to end without a script, and I've got it.
Wow.
That was like, didn't even have to think about it.
Oh, no, like anytime someone asks, that's like, that's my immediate answer. And I don't even think it's like particularly fantastic. I just think it's something that I grew up watching a lot because it's one of the few scary movies my mom actually let me have a copy of. So like I just watched it a lot. And so now there's almost like a nostalgia factor added to it for me.
So would that be your like comfort horror? If you're looking for something scary to watch, that's your go-to?
Probably, absolutely. Or like the old TV miniseries of It. I know it's horrendous. Like, it's not good quality at all.
Oh, wow.
But I, for some reason, was raised watching that as well. And so, like, there's, like, a weird nostalgia for that one as well for me.
See, everyone swears by Tim Curry, but I haven't seen that one. I've only seen one.
I low-key think he's better at it than the Skarsgård kid. Just gonna throw that out there.
I think they're equal, but they're very different, but I think they're equal. Yeah. But Tim Curry is Tim Curry. I mean, he's like classic amazingness.
Yeah.
He's everything.
Taylor, what was the first horror movie you remember seeing? Was it also The Ring?
No, it may not have been. It may have been like a really bad, like, was there a movie called Hide and Seek, I want to say, back in like early 2000s? It was like, I think like a D-list movie.
Hide and Seek.
Clearly it's not a thing because I don't even really remember it.
It does sound familiar.
It sounds like a thing that could be turned into a horror movie, just the name.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
There are some titles that it's like, that's probably a horror movie. It feels like Hide and Seek is one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hold on. Let's Google it.
I want to say it was like 2002.
Hide and Seek movie.
Oh.
2005.
Oh, later than I thought. So maybe it wasn't the first.
It did, was nominated for MTV Movie Award for Most Frightened Performance.
Serious?
But it's MTV. Remember. Sorry.
Do we trust MTV?
Oddly enough, it's get 6 out of 10 on IMDb, 13% on Rotten Tomato.
Oh my gosh. I mean, maybe it was The Ring and I just, maybe it was The Ring. And I remember like my parents watching the Scream movies and those are not really that scary to me, but like I didn't like actually watch the Scream movies probably until like my late high school years. Which I graduated in 2012.
That's when they came out for me, but you know, whatever. Who is your ultimate final girl?
Oh, I was not prepared for this question, so I do not know.
Didn't I send you
the You did.
Like did we this prepare one. This?
Probably because I don't have an answer, and that's probably why I was like, oh, you know what, I'll think about that later, and I just never went back to
it. All right.
You mean these answers aren't scripted?
Absolutely not.
In this case, no. All right. Well, I'll ask Katie and Matt then, since it's been a while since you both answered that question. Who's your favorite? Your ultimate final girl?
Ripley.
Okay. Nice.
Gotta be
not Ripley. To step on everything that Taylor just said, but Sydney Prescott.
Yeah.
Is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Also Sarah, obviously, from The Descent, because that's one of my favorite movies. So her as well.
Very nice. How long would you last in a horror movie?
Oh, I would be like one of the first out. Like I have no sense of being quiet. I am like this, like I will jump and like scream at someone's face if they scare me. And yeah, no, I'd be dead really quick.
I respect that you admitted this. Most people I know would say, oh my God, I'd survive. But no, I respect the admission that like,
oh gosh, I cannot sugarcoat this. Like I would. No, I'd probably like the opening scene death. Like that's how bad I am.
See, I don't know, Taylor. I feel like you would be kept around because you're very sarcastic and funny.
Oh,
so yeah. You know, you would kind of be like you would fill that role
comedic
and you would
relief almost.
Yeah,
the comedic relief armor.
Yeah,
you might be like one that lasts till the sequel and then you die, like first in the sequel. Yeah. Maybe one of those, like a Randy.
I can handle
that. R.I.P. Randy. Excellent. All right. Well, let's talk about Jurassic Park. So because Jurassic Park is such a fan favorite movie, we decided to do something a little different. And we reached out on social media to get some fans' thoughts on their favorite scenes. But before we get to that, here's a little fun fact about raptors that maybe you didn't know.
Hey, Sherry, longtime fan of the podcast. Thanks for having me on, even for a brief moment today. I thought for a quick appearance, I'd share just a tidbit of trivia about the movie, specifically about the raptors and what's up with them in the first one. So in reality, velociraptors are only about a foot and a half tall, where another member of the raptor family, Deinonychus, is actually closer to the 5-6 foot tall creatures you see. The author of the book, Michael Crichton, mixed the velociraptors and Deinonychus up in the movie, which sort of worked out with what Steven Spielberg wanted anyway. Spielberg wanted the raptors to be even bigger than they are in the movie, closer to 10 feet tall, insisting that the bigger, the better. At the time, this would have been a completely made-up dinosaur, more so than what's in the movie already. But halfway through production, paleontologists discovered a new specimen of raptor in Utah that just so happened to be about 10 feet tall. The new raptor ended up being called Utah Raptor, original, I know, but was almost called Utah Raptor Spielbergy. A few pieces of trivia that sort of form one big piece relating to the velociraptors in the film. Thanks for having me cameo. Enjoy the movie and hold on to your bus.
We got the most answers about people's favorite scenes, and we got those through Twitter. So Dr. Butcher, MD, Medical Deviate, says that his favorite scenes are probably the scenes where Spielberg shows that the dinosaurs, while intimidating and potentially dangerous, are not monsters. Both scenes with the Brontosaurus spring to mind because they're about wonder and the miracle of life. Jessica from at We Who Walk Here, who's been on the show a few times and is always a delightful guest, said that, "I will admit that I'm a sucker for the game warden's line deliveries. They remember, and clever girl always give me chills." Clever girl is definitely something that came up quite a few times. J.A. Sullivan on Twitter said, "I love Jurassic Park. Clever girl is probably my fave scene, closely followed by Where's the Goat?" And we also had Nicole, who was on our Tremors episode, who said that kitchen scene was so tense. A few months ago, I had the privilege of being on the podcast And That's It, featuring Juno and Derek, where we talked about some Nightmare on Elm Street movies, particularly my very favorite, Dream Warriors. And Derek, who you can find on Twitter at DerekSykes17, said simply that Jurassic Park is a perfect movie. And I can't disagree with him. I really do think it is a perfect movie. Do you remember the first time you saw Jurassic Park?
Ooh. No.
No.
I was a young child.
Okay, so this movie came out before I was born.
Oh my God.
I'm a 95, Sherry. I'm a 95 baby.
I'm a 93, but I'm a July 93, and I believe this was a June 93.
It was release. June 93. You are correct. Katie, do you remember?
Yeah, I was really young when it came out. So I don't think so. I know I saw it. I think I saw it relatively close to, but I think I was like 5 when it came out. So it was like, I didn't understand things.
Fair enough.
I want to say the first time I saw it was after the third one was already out. And then I think at one point, like me and my parents like sat on the couch and like over the course of a couple of weeks, slowly made our way through all three original movies.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So I probably was like 12 maybe. So probably like 2005-ish maybe.
Celine, Sherry, I obsessively watched this movie as a kid because, like, when I was a child, I obsessively watched the movies, the same movies over and over and over again.
Yes, I did that too.
Like, mm-hmm. I feel like this was the movie that started my like dinosaur paleontology kick that lasted pretty much from when I was an infant until I was like probably third grade is probably when like that kind of died. And like for the longest time, I wanted to be a paleontologist, but I'm not a paleontologist right now, so we see where that. Session went.
How many times do you think you've seen this movie? Because I feel like this is the kind of movie that people watch a lot.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Probably like 5 or 6 times over the years.
Yeah.
Like I revisit every few years.
Yeah. I'll say in full, probably at least 6 times, but it's one of those where every time it was like on TV, I would watch it. Even if it was like halfway through, I don't care. I would still watch. Yeah.
I love
Based on my obsessive watching, I would conservatively say 30.
Oh, wow.
Just all those times as a kid when I would just like put it on and watch it. Plus the 2 that I watched it to prep for this episode. Plus all the times it's been on TV. So counting all those, like 30 is like probably lowballing it, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like I would agree with you, Matt. I think like I'm up there too, because I think that, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording and the movie's almost 30 years old. And I think I've seen it at least once a year since it came out.
Oh, that's true. Maybe I have seen it that many times. That's a good point.
Yeah. I think it's something until old. You think about that. And until you think about how old it is, you're like, oh yeah, I probably have only seen it, you know, a handful of times, but then nope, it doesn't get old. You're right, Matt.
I mean, it's one that's, it's fun to get to, like, it's just a fun adventure story almost. You know, it's not really an adventure, more, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the IMDb summary is: a pragmatic paleontologist visiting an almost complete theme park is tasked with protecting a couple of kids after a power failure causes the park's cloned dinosaurs to run loose.
Pragmatic Dr. Grant. That's not a word I would have used to describe you.
And also, yeah, like, you're just highlighting Dr. Grant. Like, there are other people
Excuse
here.
Excuse me. Ellie,
and what about Ellie?
She's the powerhouse behind this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, she sticks her hand in a pile of poo. Like, hello.
It's true. It's true.
She turns the power back on. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. She outruns a raptor, technically.
Yeah, she does.
Truth.
But we can talk about sexism in survival situations later.
Joy.
I'm very proud of myself for that right now. So the movie was obviously directed by Steven Spielberg, and he cited Godzilla and King Kong as some of his biggest influences on the movie. James Cameron wanted to make the movie, but literally was outbid before he could. And he later said that Spielberg was the better choice to direct it because his version would have been much more violent, which Ooh. Wouldn't have been fair to the children who relate to dinosaurs.
I kind of want to see that version, see what it would be.
Yeah, he said it would be like Aliens with dinosaurs.
Oh, I would have been so nice. Down for that.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have been so down for that.
Yeah.
However, his casting is a little questionable because he wanted to have Arnold Schwarzenegger as Alan Grant.
No. Okay, no, I don't want it now. I don't want it.
No, no. Get to the chopper.
Hard pass.
He's just get to the chopper again. Yeah. Oh my God.
Literally, he would have the opportunity to say that in this movie.
He's like, let me move this dinosaur with my arms and then get it out of the way so we can run.
He would end up punching the T-Rex. Exactly. That's how the movie ends.
Punch the T-Rex. Well, oddly enough, Bill Paxton was going to be cast as Malcolm in James Cameron's dream version. That. Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
And Charlton Heston as John Hammond.
No,
I can't see that either.
Maybe it's because I have this cast in my head that I don't think anyone else could do this.
No. Well, just wait till we get to the possible casting choices for this movie because some of them are very, very odd.
That's exciting.
The screenplay was written by Michael Crichton and David Cope, based on the novel, obviously, that Michael Crichton wrote that was published in 1990. And he wrote the novel because he was very concerned about the rise of biogenetics and the exploration of it for the sake of profit. So capitalism run amok, basically. Four studios put in bids for the movie rights before the novel was even published. Wow. There were all kinds of different people that were talked about to direct. So Warner Brothers, when they bid, wanted Tim Burton to direct it.
No, thank you.
Hard pass.
I love him, but no.
I love him, but that would not make sense for those.
No. Columbia Pictures wanted it for Richard Donner. 20th Century Fox wanted Joe Dante to do it. And then Universal was like, Steven Spielberg. I feel like it's a good thing that Universal got it because I love Joe Dante, love Richard Donner, mm-hmm. I love Tim Burton, but...
This is such a Spielberg movie. Like
it is.
Spielberg,
I mean, he did Jaws. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg was actually his first choice as well because they had a working relationship already and they were friends. So he kind of was happy with that.
Are you referring to Michael Crichton's first choice?
Yes.
Is that what you mean? Okay.
I know, Taylor, you've read the book. Matt, you've read the book?
I've read it like at least 5 times.
I've only read part of it, honestly. I don't think I've finished it ever.
I mean, plot-wise, I feel like it's very the same, but there is more, like, explanation of how they created the dinosaurs mm-hmm. and stuff.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
there's different motivations and different survivors.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think John Hammond comes out much cleaner in the movie than he does in the book.
Significantly.
He's kind of a douche.
They reverse his position.
He's terrible in it, yeah.
So the movie does star Sam Neill, who is delightful. Laura Dern, who...
So I might have a crush on him.
Oh, same.
It was weird me seeing him in Daybreaker or Daywalkers or whatever, the vampire movie with Ethan Hawke, because he's evil on that. And it's like, no, he's Dr. Grant. You can't make him evil. Mm-hmm. It's not okay.
Have you seen him in Event Horizon?
I haven't seen Event Horizon.
Ooh.
I haven't seen it either.
It's a fantastic movie, but... Sam Neill goes through some stuff. Okay. We'll just leave it at that. Also stars Laura Dern, who, as Matt said before we started recording, doesn't age.
She was 26 when this movie came out.
She's beautiful, though.
She was 26. My God. She stopped aging at 26. And it's like, I mean, I'm 26 now. And like, I don't look that good. So Laura Dern, give me your secrets. You are fantastic.
Blood of a child, that's what it is.
Blood of a child. Oh no.
You have to rub it on your face 4 times a day.
Well, that's it. I'm only doing 3.
Yeah, there's your mistake. Hello.
Maybe it's like the death becomes her stuff. She has some of that magic. Have you guys seen that movie? It's everything.
Once I have not seen that. And I feel like it's totally at my alley.
Oh, it's great. It's very campy and very fun.
Oh, that sounds delightful. We also have Jeff Goldblum. Richard Attenborough, Joseph Mazzello, Ariana Richards, Samuel L. Jackson, and Wayne Knight.
And BD Wong for 2 minutes. For 2 minutes.
BD Wong. Yes.
And like, he's one of the only ones who like returns and has like significant stuff in the.
I don't like what happens to him.
Yeah, I don't like more evil.
The turn his character takes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That's okay. He has all of SVU and everything else to prop him up.
That's true. That's true. So possible casting choices. Are we ready?
Yes.
Okay. Alan Grant, William Hurt, Kurt Russell.
No.
See, I love Kurt Russell, but I couldn't see it.
I love him, but I don't, he's too like of a tough dude. I don't see it.
Dennis Quaid.
Oh, maybe.
Kevin Costner.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
I can see Dennis Gibson. Quaid, but not Kevin Costner.
No.
Mel Gibson. What?
No.
No.
I would no. Not
like
that. Hard no. Hard no.
Robin Williams. Aww. Totally different dynamic.
I mean, but he did Good Will Hunting, though. So he can do serious.
He probably could do it because he can do everything, but I don't see it as a.
He could.
I don't see it.
But I feel like he would try. He would. People would expect him to be jokey. Even though, like, he has had serious roles.
I think the other thing is, too, is that Alan Grant, as played by Sam Neill, is a little, as we've talked about, he's, like, a little dashing. And you develop this crush on him similarly, like, Lex develops a crush on him. And so yes. does everybody else watching this movie. I don't know that you would have got that with Robin Williams.
I don't think so. There's, like, a vibe that Sam Neill has. I don't know. It's just a vibe. It might be him being a good actor or just the charm, but I get it, Lex. Yeah. I understand.
Same.
It's that foreign mystique to him. He's an Irishman living in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So.
Dylan McDermott, Tom Sizemore, and wait Dylan for it. McDermott
could almost do it.
Dylan McDermott, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford.
What? No.
See, I saw this. So I was telling Sherry, I watched the, I couldn't hook up my VCR, so I had to watch it on Amazon, curse you Bezos. But they had this thing where like it pops up all like the trivia from IMDb on there. And this one popped up and I had to sit and hold myself for a second because it's like, I love you, Harrison, but you would have been too dashing for this movie.
It would have been Indiana Jones with dinosaurs.
I don't think it's that. I think it would have been too much about him and not about the dinosaurs. Yeah. And that's not what you
Who would have had more sex appeal, like Jeff Goldblum or Harrison Ford?
Jeff Goldblum,
because he's freaking everything still as well.
Like, come on, that scene where he's like leaning back, shirt open, and you're just like, damn.
Just I casually hurt myself.
Let me disrobe quietly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. He knows he's a panty dropper and that's what gets him through.
Ellie Sattler, there were a lot, so I'm not going to read them all. I'll just read a couple. So Sandra Bullock considered. Nope.
No.
Elizabeth Hurley?
I don't know who she is.
Remind me.
No. No.
Have you seen Austin Powers? The first Austin Powers?
Oh
gosh. So long ago.
His love interest, basically.
Oh.
Okay.
Nicole Kidman.
Maybe.
No, I don't think
she would have done it. She wouldn't have done it as well if she did. She wouldn't have done it nearly as well as.
You know who could have done it? I don't think they're the same age, but. Kirsten Dunst.
Oh,
interesting.
This movie was probably a little early for her, though. She was still.
Age wise, it probably wouldn't match, but like because of Jumanji, she could totally do this one. 1,000%.
Yeah. Okay. When you bring up Jumanji, I can.
Yeah, see. No, I get that.
I still agree. Go Laura Dern, though.
Same.
So some horror scream queens were also considered, like Sigourney Weaver.
No. Oh. No. No.
I love you, but no. She's,
I love her, but
she doesn't have like the softness that's required for Ellie.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis, same thing. I can't see it. Like
she doesn't have the softness.
That she's
fired. Yeah.
Because I feel like Ellie Sattler is more like there's like a nurturing motherly aspect.
She's
100%
she's an unwilling action hero. Like I feel like Ripley was like, let's kill some aliens.
Yeah.
And then Jamie Lee Curtis is like, let's kill Michael Myers. Like Ellie Sattler's just like, plants? Dinosaur plants? Let me dig in this dinosaur's poop to see what's wrong with it.
No.
And then she's like, oh, my family's in trouble. Now my badassery will come.
Ian Malcolm, Jim Carrey was considered.
No, but
I do love him. He's my love, but no.
He's my love.
Not for Ian Malcolm.
Would have been too weird for Ian Malcolm if that's possible.
Oh, wait. You know who else would have been too weird? Bruce Campbell.
Ooh.
Oh. Wow. He would just say groovy all the time.
And Johnny Depp. Which, can you imagine?
Again, no.
Tim Burton doing Jurassic Park with Johnny Depp. No.
That would have been a Willy Wonka disaster.
Oh, no. John Hammond, fairly reasonable. Sean Connery was considered.
Oh.
And again, same sort of thing. They were like, well, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, like, we're going to do this again.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Clint Eastwood and Marlon Brando were also considered. I just think, like, Sean Connery, I could see, but Richard Attenborough is perfect.
Well, I mean, the something about the Attenborough family's voice, like, do you guys know David Attenborough?
Yes.
Yep. Oh, brothers. Yeah.
That is like butter. The voices are. I just they're both fantastic.
What we never got was like a dinosaur documentary in the style and voice of David Attenborough.
I would watch that in theaters. I'm just saying.
Yeah, me too.
We got something close with BBC did Walking with Dinosaurs, but it's not David Attenborough.
No.
Disappointed in that.
Christina Ricci and Claire Danes were considered for the role of Lex.
I could see that, actually. Yeah. Christina Ricci more so than
Claire Danes. I don't see Claire Danes. I can see.
No.
I can see Christina Ricci doing it because she's cute and can be awkward.
Just less murdery Wednesday Addams.
Yeah. It's true.
The role of Tim was always going to Joseph Mazzola. Is that his name? Joseph Mazzola.
Perfect. Perfect little child. Perfect child.
Because he had auditioned for something else with Steven Spielberg. And I think you're right. And he didn't get it. And Spielberg said, don't worry, we will work together. And I mean, really, Hook, Jurassic Park.
The thing is, like, as a kid, I hated Tim just because he was annoying. But like looking back on it, it's like, oh, wait, shit, I am Tim. I would have been Tim.
Also, Tim knew things, and if Lex paid attention a little bit, that would have helped when they got smashed in the car. Just saying.
Yeah. But I mean, they're also like children, so can you really blame them?
Yeah.
No, it's like watching it now, it's like they're just doing what I would have done in this scenario. So I look as adult Matt, I can be like, I respect your ability to survive. You did what I would have done. You kids are cool in my book. But kid Matt would have been like, I hate you. You don't know what you're doing.
So filming took place in California and Hawaii from August to November of 1992. On September 11th, 1992, a hurricane actually hit the island that they were on. So it delayed production. The crew were actually caught in the hurricane, but they did manage to capture some shots, which you see at one point when the waves are like crashing against the dock. That's actual footage from the real hurricane. When the hurricane hit, Hurricane Aniki, incidentally, the cast and crew were moved into the ballroom of the hotel that they were staying at. Oh. And Richard Attenborough was like, no, I'm going to stay in my hotel room. Like, he's like, I'm old enough. I'm not sleeping in the ballroom. And he slept through the entire event. When asked how he could have done that, he said, my dear boy, I survived the Blitz, referring to the Blitz of World War II.
Wow.
For such a move, like a movie that relies so heavily on special effects and CGI, they finished principal photography 12 days ahead of schedule and on budget.
Oh, wow. Awesome. That's impressive.
It never happens.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But I feel like at this point, Steven Spielberg was probably an expert and was like, I could do this in my sleep.
He was a very well-oiled machine by this point.
John Williams composed the score. And Taylor, you're a music guy.
I really am. John
Williams. What are your thoughts on this score?
Well, I think it's fantastic in the sense that he took a simple theme and now it's like a whole like branding for an entire like series, like an entire franchise. I mean, we have like, is there not, correct me if I'm wrong, but like Universal Studios or something in Florida, like you can go to Jurassic Park essentially and you walk in and you hear like the most iconic theme. Like, I think it's just fantastic. I think John Williams is great at making themes memorable and like catchy and also just good.
Can you hum a little bit for us?
Da 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 da. Okay, I'm done.
It is the best. I think it's maybe the best theme music ever. It's one of the top, for sure.
For me, when you get to the ba 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 ba, the first time, it's just like the goosebumps just ripple. It's just so like it's like that promise of adventure. And like as far as composers go, I have to, one, John Williams is also a Bruin, so I also have to like that Bruin solidarity. But like people submit like Hans Zimmer a lot of the time is like the best composer alive. I'm like, nah, John Williams.
It's funny because I think it's one of the most recognizable overtures, like pieces of music, like from movies ever. And yeah, you're right, Matt. Like the goosebumps, like I still get goosebumps. Also, I love that all three of you hummed or sang a little bit of that, the theme. So thank you. Steven Spielberg actually invested in the creation of DTS when he was working on the movie because he really wanted something to showcase the film's sound design. So he actually was like, I need to invest in this company that specializes in digital surround sound formats because he wanted the sound to be incredible. And like just reading through all of the different sounds that they used to create the dinosaur noises, it's intense.
Turtle sex.
Oh.
What?
Have you not heard that legend is that the velociraptors are partially recorded turtles having sex?
No. I have not heard this.
I thought you just said turtle sex for kicks. I was like, where did that come from?
No. But part of the legend, I don't know if this is true or not, but the legend behind the velociraptor sounds is that part of the sounds that they recorded to blend into the velociraptors is turtles having sex.
Why would someone ruin turtles? That's not cool.
Anything, the show must go on, Katie. Anything for that sound. Like,
oh no.
Come on. I don't like it. Jurassic Park.
Like, I can't decide if that's genius because it clearly worked and it makes a very like right? good sound, or if it's just like really disturbing and should never have even been considered as an option.
It's like, how did you know that this would be the sound to record?
Wait, you don't just have that at like your wake up alarm every day?
Also, who, what kind of Steve Irwin person's walking around like, oh, there they are. Let's get this for the raptors. Like, it doesn't make sense. Out.
Let's record these tittles. Let's
record these tittles.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So the movie premiered on June 9th, 1993 at the Uptown Theater in Washington, D.C., and then had a wide release on June 11th. Its first weekend, it broke box office records and made $47 million, eventually went on to make more than $900 million worldwide. Currently, the box office sits at about $1.034 billion.
That is insane.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, wow, wow.
It deserves every dollar.
It does.
It does. No, hands down does.
David Cope remembers the day that it opened. He said he was in New York. He walked to a theater to see how it was doing. A guy comes out and announces to the big line, "Ladies and gentlemen, the 7 o'clock show of Jurassic Park is sold out." And people go, "Ooh." And he goes, "Also, the 10 o'clock show is sold out." And they went, "Ooh." And also, Saturday night, 7 and 10 o'clock shows are also sold out. And he was like, "I'm not an expert, but I think this is very good." Budget was $63 million, but they actually spent $65 million on a very intense marketing campaign, which included licensing deals with over 100 companies. So they spent more money on marketing than they did on the actual film.
That's crazy.
I mean, the box office returns.
Totally worth it.
Yeah, clearly it was worth it. Clearly, 1,000%.
I thought this was pretty cool. So in the summer of 2020, with most movie theaters shut down because of COVID-19, new movies weren't being released. Jurassic Park topped the box office again, playing in small drive-ins that popped up to meet demand. And the weekend of June 19th, it beat out another film for top box office with less than $1 million in sales. What movie do you think it beat out weekend of June 19th? It was also an old movie.
Can you give us like a decade or like 5 years?
Came out in 1975.
I wasn't alive in the 70s, so.
You're not allowed to watch things when you weren't alive.
you would know this one.
I broke the rules for.
Was it Rocky Horror? Was nope. it Jaws?
Jaws! I was just going to go.
Wow!
I may have Googled movies that came out in
1975. Taylor! Cheater!
I was going to guess like Psycho or something.
But it is kind of badass that like a Spielberg beat a Spielberg. Yeah.
Right?
Spielberg lost, but he also only way. Won.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And like monster movie versus monster movie.
I'm going to confess something very embarrassing. I have never seen Jaws.
I've only seen it once for college.
My God.
So you're okay.
I know.
That's insane.
Should we have a watch party?
What? Yes.
Probably.
Probably.
Also, the first, I like the second one a lot, actually, because of how the shark dies.
How many Jaws movies are there? Three?
Four.
Four. Okay.
There's four.
Unless in continuity of Back to the Future, it's like Jaws 11 in that timeline.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes. It's true.
Yes. So reviews were, for the most part, quite good. So Janet Maslin of the New York Times called it a true movie milestone, presenting awe and fear-inspiring sights never before seen on the screen. Peter Travers from Rolling Stone described it as colossal entertainment, the eye-popping, mind-bending, kick-out-the-jams thrill ride of summer and probably the year. Didn't love the characters, however, and called them dry bones, and said that Crichton and co-screenwriter David Cope have flattened them into non-entities.
We do not stand for the slander of Ellie Sattler.
We do not.
She's beautiful. I love her.
Ellie and Alan are like, come on. That's crap. I don't believe that.
There's sexism in survival scenarios.
Yes. Roger Ebert gave the film 3 stars out of 4, saying the movie delivers all too well on its promise to show us dinosaurs. We see them early and often, and they are indeed a triumph of special effects artistry. But the movie is lacking in other qualities that it needs even more, such as a sense of awe and wonderment and strong human story values.
I'm sorry, but can we just talk about the
film? Who is this human? Who are you?
Enter the park.
Obviously,
the
this guy has like a T-Rex in his backyard that he sees every day, so he's just
underwhelmed.
Cash about it all. That's crap.
But no, between the music and like just the graphics of all like the dinosaurs in like a quote unquote natural habitat, stunning. Like your jaw drops the first time you see it. Like, mm-hmm. What is this man talking about? I disagree.
100%. Like, you think about, and we'll talk about it, like the first time they see the dinosaurs, right? Like, and it's the awe and wonderment is right there. And it continues throughout the movie.
Like, I want to time travel and just confront this man.
Ugh. But I can also say, I feel like the special effects and the look of the dinosaurs have aged quite well.
Yes.
That's what happens when you use practical effects instead of special, like CGI.
Like, yes. I almost feel like they're just as good as like the Jurassic World movies that have come out in recent years.
I would say better. I would say that this looks better.
Plus, Jurassic World had to like pull new dinosaurs to make it exciting, apparently.
True. A T-Rex and a raptor in one. Congratulations.
Bigger, they just had to make them bigger, better, and more vicious than the Velociraptor or T-Rex. That's all. Yeah. Yeah.
Except for the one in the ocean is actually terrifying. That one's
terrifying. Oh, it is terrifying.
Yeah.
So it was nominated and actually won 3 Academy Awards. Any guesses what they were?
Ooh. I want to say maybe special effects is one of them.
Best visual effects. Yeah.
Best visual.
Best music.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Best picture. It's got to be best picture.
Nope. Schindler's List also came out, I think, the same year.
Spielberg's just beating Spielberg all the time. Mm-hmm. Come on, Spielberg. Let Spielberg win sometimes.
Did any of the cast win? Is that one of them?
Best director?
Nope. Best sound editing and best sound mixing.
Okay, that's fair.
That makes sense.
So those turtle sex worked.
Clearly.
When in doubt, turtle sex it out.
Oh my gosh.
And that's the tagline for this episode right there.
Quite on sit. The tittles are doing their thing. Quite on sit.
Oh my gosh. I am not drunk enough for this.
I'm not drunk at all. This is just natural.
So we open with ominous music and the credits start. We find ourselves in the jungle of Isla Nublar, surrounded by armed men with construction hats on that read Jurassic Park. And we meet Robert Muldoon, who is everything that a game warden should be. For somebody who doesn't have a lot of lines, almost every one of his lines are iconic.
He is everything. I think if he was taken away, I'd be very sad because he's prime.
This big metal and concrete cage is being dropped by a crane onto the ground by what looks kind of like a zoo enclosure, which we'll later find out is exactly what it is. And we hear something shriek from within the cage just as it's positioned by the gate. Like this whole big production, we're about to see why, because they're about to release whatever is inside. And poor Joffrey standing up on top of the cage, he is lifting the gate, but the creature inside charges forward, causes the cage to slide back, which allows her to grab Joffrey, who has kind of fallen in between the cage and the enclosure. She locks eyes with Muldoon as they try to pull Joffrey out of danger. Muldoon saying, shoot her, shoot her. Somebody's got to do a better impression than me.
That's a very iconic moment, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone knows that. Shoot her. I can't do it. I'm not going to embarrass myself.
It's funny. I tweeted that I was watching this movie the other night, and I just started shouting that along with like the movie. And I thought my neighbors are going to be like, what is going on?
See, when I was watching this movie as a kid, I didn't understand what was happening during this scene. Like I just like, things are happening. There is something off.
Yeah.
I just knew that there was a dinosaur and some dude was getting eaten.
Mm-hmm. Like, I also didn't know he had a name. I just call him like Raise the Gate guy that has a terrible, deadly fate because I didn't know he had a name. Yeah. Poor guy.
Well, I mean, I feel like as a kid, all that kid's going to care about is like hearing the dinosaurs and like the mystery of when do I get to see this dinosaur? Like, that's all they care about.
Mm-hmm.
Like. Thinking about it now, though, it's like they're tasing, like everybody's tasing this dinosaur. And it's like, okay, if the tasers aren't stopping it, why does like the electrified gate stop it later?
Ooh.
Hmm.
And does this raptor actually die?
I don't think the raptor dies.
I don't think so. I don't think that because they don't talk about it dying. I have a feeling it's the same one he's talking about later. That's another thing.
And I also just point out that I also feel like a better method of like containing these animals is not to keep them in cages, but to dig like large holes in the ground to be their place of like living, because then there's like a natural barrier. And so unless they can jump super high, like they're not going to get out.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't be able to see them from the cars.
Yeah.
No.
And that would be like a deep island to dig all those holes.
That's the Tyrannosaur paddock anyway, but yes. The T-Rex got out somehow. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but then you guys could build a park around like looking down into all like the little habitats of the different animals instead of like in a car.
Yeah, but then you just see the top of the raptor's Jurassic head. Park that's would not exist. Exciting.
Yeah.
Okay.
he's like, I have been put down. I have tried and it's not
worked. I'm just trying to think logistically that would probably be better and they would not get sued as often.
That sounds like sparing expense, Taylor.
Taylor, I feel like you should take your plans for your dinosaur park and build it yourself.
That's what I'm doing as we speak.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Please don't make me be the gate lifter.
No, you're the gate lifter.
Rude.
I'm kidding.
Joffrey is pulled inside this enclosure. So rest in peace, Joffrey. First death within the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Or should we say rest in pieces?
I mean, that's more accurate. Yeah, yeah. So next up, we meet the lawyer, aka Gennaro, and he is visiting the Mano de Dios amber mine to discuss the accident. So his entrance, though, he is being pulled on a raft by a shirtless man.
That's how I want to enter every scenario.
Right? And he's just like standing there, legs like
he
spread
looks
wide.
Very
like,
uncomfortable.
He
yeah.
does. Yeah. He is there to meet with John Hammond because, weird, Joffrey's death has stirred up a whole bunch of trouble, including a $20 million lawsuit. So they need to have an inspection to ensure that the park is safe. He's talking about all of this with Juanito, who tells him that Hammond hates inspections, but too bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen. Gennaro is going to bring Ian Malcolm for the inspection, but the investors want someone else, someone perhaps a little more respectable, like Alan Grant. So we have no idea who these people are right now. Also, do you really think, like, does Gennaro seem like Ian Malcolm would be his go-to guy?
No.
No.
I mean, I love that he brings him. Juanito scoffs at him saying they want Alan Grant. He's like, you'll never get him out of Montana. He's a digger like me. As he holds up, thank you. As he holds up a piece of amber with a mosquito in it, which we'll find out again later on what the significance of that is. And that's the first 6 minutes of the movie. A lot happens in that first 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. Yeah.
I do remember watching as a kid that I didn't understand. That's why I love, which we're going to get to, like dino video, because in the beginning I was like kind of like it was really exciting, then I was like, what is this boring thing, who's this lawyer, like, what is this? Like, because when you're a kid you're like, I don't, what,
I just want to see the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
it's not a dinosaur movie without a dig. So we move to Montana and we see a group of paleontologists brushing away at some dinosaur bones. And this is Alan Grant, who is played to perfection by Sam Neill, and Ellie Sattler, played by Laura Dern, who we're all apparently big fans of.
Absolutely.
Yes. So there are a couple in this movie, right?
Yes.
Okay, because the book they are not. And they're very clearly not a couple.
Well, that's clearly a good change then, if they're not in the book.
Wait, I don't think I really, I guess because I just had the book in mind, I don't think I realized that they were a couple in the movie.
I didn't realize it until like, yeah, I thought they were just like coworkers. But but then there's a scene where like it gets more obvious later on, like she'll call him honey and stuff.
Well, and he literally says it, like he's like, yeah. We're to get, like he didn't say the words, but he does the guy thing where he's like, yeah. She's mine.
Yes, because like Ian Malcolm's all flirty with her and he's like, yeah. Do you know if Dr. Sattler is single? And he's like,
Why?
Yeah. Why are you asking?
Yeah.
So they view this super high-tech computer imaging of the bones, which it was 1993. It was high-tech for the time.
It really was. You can't fault that.
It's actually a velociraptor. And he starts to explain his theory about how dinosaurs have more in common with birds than reptiles when he's interrupted by a bratty little kid who's like, that doesn't look very scary.
I hated this kid so much as a kid. I still hate him.
Oh my God.
Just a little look on his face.
Object of my ire. It's like he did this role so perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so naughty good. Brat. I can't.
So many kudos to this kid actor. Just like I wanted to like yell at him as a child because like this would have been like my dream to go on this dig.
Yeah.
And he's just dinosaur stops.
Skeletons. And then he's just like, psh, that's not scary. And it's like, excuse me, child.
It's also like, which kid are you? Because you're the only one. Like, who do you belong to? Why are you there? Why are you being mean? Like, let him live. You don't know anything.
Did you know there is a popular fan theory that is actually a young Owen Grady from Jurassic World, aka Chris Pratt?
What?
That's a fan theory.
That'd be kind of rad, but he looks nothing like him.
No.
I feel like that's just the thing that people
Oh, for sure. Like, for sure.
It's saying like in Iron Man 2, that kid that he saves is Tom Holland's Peter.
No.
I don't buy it. I think you're just Is he just making things up after the fact just to make fans pay attention to your movie again? It's like the George Lucasing of movies.
The George Lucasing.
If you can't tell, I don't respect George Lucas.
Oh,
we'll get in. We can get into that some other time.
So we learn here that Alan doesn't like two things. He doesn't like computers and he doesn't like children.
I mean, I don't like children either. So
he turns and terrifies this kid by telling him all about how raptors hunt. And it's pretty scary, like the way he does it. He's like slashing across the kid's like torso with his raptor claw.
And then like he's so talking good. About their intelligence and like how they're like ambush hunters. If only we could see how that actually plays out.
Right?
Yeah. He's so good. And I love how he does the like, whoosh, like coming at you from the sides. And this kid's just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So good.
They're walking back to their trailer, Ellie and Alan, and they're discussing the defects of children because they smell. Some kids smell, Alan says, and a helicopter. Yeah. They do. It's true. a helicopter arrives on site, which puts Alan in an even worse mood as it potentially could damage the bones that they have uncovered. So he walks into his trailer to find an elderly man all dressed in white in his fridge, grabbing a bottle of champagne, which he opens, much to Alan's chagrin.
Also, can this old man teleport? Because we don't see him entering at all.
Right. You see the helicopter landing and then Alan going like, but you don't see.
He is magic. So who knows?
Yeah, it's true.
Basically Dumbledore.
Oh my God. So far from. How dare you.
So this is John Hammond, one of their benefactors, and he has a proposition for them. Michael Crichton actually wanted John Hammond to be like a dark Walt Disney, which.
Oh, that kind of works. Yeah.
And Steven Spielberg identified with John Hammond, seeing strong parallels between his work as a filmmaker and Hammond's vision for the park. And that's actually kind of why he was made a more sympathetic character than he was in the book.
Oh, I love that.
Spielberg also lost the Best Picture and Best Director awards to him when E.T. lost to Gandhi.
Oh,
that's fair. Gandhi was a fantastic film.
He tells them he's setting up a biological preserve off of Costa Rica and he spared no expense, which we'll hear a million times. And Matt actually has already said it so far.
Mm-hmm.
Now, talking about expense, according to Fandango, any guesses how much it would take to build an actual Jurassic Park?
Oh my God. I can't even.
$3 billion.
Multiple billion.
Yeah, at least a couple billion. I mean, there's no way.
$23.5 million.
Excuse me.
So I was close.
That was only in the millions.
About, you know, a couple.
Yeah. Yeah. And they actually broke it down, like, and they went through like how much it would actually cost. So $1.5 billion would be the cost for the park alone, $8 million for a research and legal team.
I'm assuming that this was like, that's money of like today's.
Yes, that's 2015 American dollars.
Does Bezos even have that money?
On Google.
When in doubt, Google.
But literally, after his net worth increased to $150 billion in 2018, so it's probably just gone up now.
Holy moly.
It's ridiculous. But did he step down recently as CEO?
I think so.
Yesterday, I think.
Like a day or two ago.
Hammond invites them to come and visit and give the park their endorsement. Don't you think that, like, if you were Ellie and Alan, that you'd be like, why would you want us? And I mean, they do. But, like, I feel like they would question it a little harder. Why do you want us to come and endorse your biological preserve?
The movie needs to happen.
It's true. It's true. Let's not nitpick the movie for things like that. They're hesitant, but they do change their tune when he's like, well, I'll fully fund your dig for the next 3 years. That's pretty good incentive.
I mean, absolutely.
They're so excited. It's very sweet.
That's three years of funding. My God.
Like, but also, yeah. I feel like in the book, there is like a moment where like they were basically, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, because I feel like you're probably knowing, you know, the book better. But isn't there a moment where they're like, if we don't get more funding, we're going to have to shut down our dig site?
I think you're right.
I believe so. Especially like paleontology is not an in-demand field.
Correct.
So like you're always scrapping for funding, like even more than like other scientific areas, like you're scrapping for funding everywhere. So 3 years of funding for them is like, oh my God, we get to live for three more years.
Mm-hmm.
So we next meet some very shady characters, Dennis Nedry and Dodgson, who I don't think we learn his first name, who are about to engage in some corporate espionage. Lewis Dodgson? Oh, I think you're right, because they make a comment about that being like a link to Alice in Wonderland.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Because then there's like, they talk about later on, Samuel L. Jackson's character says something about the White Rabbit Protocol or something.
Oh, cool.
Nedry is going to deliver viable embryos to Dodgson for $50,000 each, which, if he gets the 15 species off the island, is $1.5 million. Hmm. And Wayne Knight, as Dennis Nedry, owns this scene.
His little, that's his scream, right? Not like what the can is making when he opens the can.
I don't know.
Like the insane high-pitched giggle he makes. I thought it was partly him and the
right.
can. I think it's a mixture. It's insane sound.
Squealing, but it's like making this like release of pressure sound. So it's both the Nedry and the can.
The I never Nedry would have even thought to think like in question where that sound was coming from.
Dodgson is trying to be super sneaky, but Nedry is having none of it. He's like, Dodgson, we got Dodgson here. And he's like, nobody cares. Come on.
Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they scheme and they plan. They come up with this thing. So this is what you're going to bring the embryos to me in. And it's a little Barbasol like shaving cream can that actually has a false bottom.
Which I can already smell what that shaving cream smells like. Just saying.
I didn't know what shaving cream was as a kid. So I had no idea what this thing was.
We now get a helicopter ride as Ellie, Alan, John, and Gennaro are joined by the charismatic chaotician, Ian Malcolm, played by Jeff Goldblum. Katie, you're getting very excited there.
I love him. Well, I think he's like everything. I think if you take him away, it makes a giant difference in this movie. So I think
I agree. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the core cast, any of them taken out in the movie would have been nothing of what it is.
Yeah. Well, and he kind of is the only one that can inject some comedy in there. So I think that's very important for this movie.
And the one with like the most personality for sure.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Hammond calls it a deplorable excess of personality. They approach the island and this is where the music just swells. And everything about this is so incredible. Like the landscapes are incredible. They seem straight out of prehistoric times. The music is incredible. It's just incredible. And they enter this secure area. There are electric fences, moats, motion sensor tracking systems, John tells Gennaro. And he's all business, Gennaro. He's like ready to shut the place down. He'll change his tune shortly. But right now he's like, I'm going to shut you down, John. If I'm not satisfied, the investors aren't satisfied. So John has them stop the vehicle as Ellie, who is actually a paleobotanist, finds vegetation that shouldn't be there. And she's very like, she's kind of nerding out. She's like, this shouldn't be here. Like, this is extinct however many years ago. And Alan's reaction is perfect. So before we see anything, we see him looking at something before taking off his hat, then standing up in the Jeep, taking off his sunglasses, like he can't believe his eyes. We still don't know what he sees. Ellie's still focused on the leaf she's looking at and has not yet noticed what everyone else has until he puts his hand on her head and turns it.
I don't think if I were in that, like in their shoes and I was witnessing this, I probably wouldn't be able to speak for like an hour.
Yeah.
I would just be so like dumbfounded and wowed and like also kind of scared and nervous because hello.
Yeah, you'd have such a mixture of emotions, right?
But like the pure joy is the, it like makes my heart so happy every single time. It's like the best.
It's literally seeing like your entire field of work, your entire passion, like in front of you. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there's any possible way for us to like experience that kind of joy. Because that's like a joy you can't actually experience because like, we're not doing the cloning of extinct things yet.
But also, I think that's partially why Ellie Sattler is such a beloved person is because there is like almost like a pure innocence of how giddy she gets about just like being in this like park and witnessing this happen. Like she's just purely ecstatic.
And like, him too. Like he can't, like he doubles over. Like he can't.
Like his legs actually go weak and he, it's brilliant.
Although I will say, I agree with Ellie. Like there's, I don't understand how they got like the extinct vegetation. Cause it explains how they got the animals, but it's like you can't extract plants from a mosquito.
I think that's why she's there. They each bring different like problems with this park. So that's her part in that.
I always cry like every time, no matter how many times I've seen this movie, this part brings tears to my eyes. And her mouth drops and she mirrors Alan's amazement. And like, then we see and hear our very first dinosaur and it's a Brachiosaurus and they're so cute.
So precious.
Oh, so the sounds made by the Brachiosaurus were a combination of whale and donkey sounds. And they were actually modeled, like their skin was modeled on African elephants.
I was going to say that it was cool. African elephant-ish texture and feel to it,
Alan says, it's a dinosaur.
it's so sweet.
It's so sweet. Ian's reaction, a little more subdued, but he's still excited. And he's like, you did it, you crazy son of a bitch. You did it.
I do love how he's watching and he say they do move in herds. He's like, I was right. It's so small. It makes me happy.
And there's so many things like throughout that you see like him having all of his theories like proven right. And he's like, just like so ecstatic. Gennaro though is still all business. However, now he's like, we're going to make a fortune off of this. So now he's just seeing dollar signs.
He's seen that pocketbook bank account get bigger.
I love later on when like they're talking about it and Hammond is like, you know, we don't want this to just be for the super rich people. He's like, we'll have coupon days.
Right? Oh, he's such a tool.
That's the interesting point I was going to bring up. They flip him here because in the book, Gennaro's like, wait, we want more people to come in to be able to afford this. And then Hammond's like, nah, screw them all. Just the rich people.
Yeah. Gennaro's a much more like sympathetic character in the book.
Yeah, he like talked about his kids in the
book. He's a family guy.
He's like, he didn't want to be here. He was like missing his kid's birthday to come on this trip.
That's probably why they switched them though, because Sherry said that he wanted to be more sympathetic. Yeah, so it makes sense.
It'd be sucky if the person that Spielberg associates himself with is like a total scumbag.
That'd be sad.
They learn that the park has a T-Rex, which should be their first sign that this is going to go badly.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not all Brachiosaurus. Yeah. Like, but the scene is absolute perfection. We get the iconic line, welcome to Jurassic Park, before we see this wide shot of the landscape.
Yes, every time.
and there's more dinosaurs. So they're like, how did you do this? Well, let's go find out. They enter the visitor center, which looks pretty much like the museum that's trying to be hip to get all the cool kids interested in learning. Mm-hmm. But really, who am I kidding? I love it and would 100% have been agog if a field trip ended up there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there's dinosaur skeletons that are arranged to look like they're attacking each other, which is a nice little bit of foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. And the way that Spielberg does the exposition, and Katie, you kind of alluded to it already, is like brilliant. Like that video with Mr. DNA, it's very theme park, but it also gets mm-hmm. a lot of exposition done quickly and in a kind of fun, interesting way.
Also, can we talk about Dinosaur? Because it's my favorite thing. It is the best thing.
That little video is such like a seventh grade science video that you would watch in school.
Which is why it's like, so fun.
It's like, yeah. it's one of those things where it's like, it's an exposition dump and you know it, but you don't mind it because yeah. it's so well done. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I love how in, I think it's Jurassic World, they like have that showing mm-hmm. in like the new park and the mm-hmm. backgrounds. Yeah. It's like a mm-hmm. nod to the original. Yeah. I thought that was fun.
I do like how they, I think they made it campy on purpose because they're like, if kids go to this, we can yeah. have like museum type visits where they can go for school and like all of that. Yeah.
Something that everyone points out is that, like, oh, do you expect John Hammond to be standing there every single tour? But it's like, I feel right? like if I'm rationalizing this out, I feel like they would change the video at least yes. because I feel like this is probably like he's in the investor stage maybe still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like it's not even
they would have one for up. Like each person that's working. Yeah.
Something like that. Like I could. That's not a very like big plot hole in this. People are just being nitpicky. This movie's perfect.
No, I'm gonna play devil about a huge plot hole. How dare
people
they
look dumb?
It's funny, Matt, because right? I originally had that as a note, and then I was like, no, and I like took it out because I was like, don't nitpick that about the movie.
Sherry.
But I think also you're right that it's like the stage that he's in. He's gonna be the one. There showing everybody like, oh, look at this, how cool it is.
I will say another little tidbit is that I used to make, this is going to be embarrassing, but screw it. I used to make like these videos, which I'm sure a lot of people did when we were growing up, when we were kids, because I like loved film and TV and everything. And I made one where we're like, let's talk about the dinosaurs. And we just like use that voice all the time. And it was like the best thing.
Oh my God.
Where can I watch this?
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. I want to see that.
We need to have plenty. A watch party.
I do have a whole, we also created all of Psycho and it's great. The OG.
It's probably better than anyway. The Vince Vaughn version, just saying.
Oh God, anything is.
It also really reminds me of like when you go to Disney World and you wait in line, they have like mm-hmm. things like this. So it has that theme yeah. park feel, right? Mm-hmm. And Ellie is really digging it. Like she's like got this little smile on her face the whole time. So basically, here's the science. They found dino DNA in mosquitoes in fossilized amber. This allowed them to extract the DNA, patch its gaps with frog DNA. Bad idea. And voila, baby dinosaur.
I will say, I think the movie actually did a better job of not being so like beat over the head about the fact that there was frog DNA put into the dinosaur DNA. Because in the book, they mentioned like every other page for like the first like a 100-page spree. It's constantly
oh man up. It's like pay attention
yeah
hey this will be important later hey
and it's like okay Michael, we got it
but Taylor, did you know that there was frog DNA?
I don't think I did. Wow, how did I not know that?
The tour continues. We see this lab full of scientists and Gennaro asking Hammond if they're autoerotic when he means animatronic is a moment that almost slips right under the radar.
He is such a dumbass.
I think that's a Freudian ridiculous. Slip. You know?
I think so.
I think Gennaro just became a more interesting character.
He did.
That's not possible. Private life.
These are some smart cookies, though, and they want to see more of the lab. So Ellie, Alan, and Ian stop the ride to go back to the lab, which is where we see BD Wong.
Yes.
Asians in Hollywood, what?
I mean, he doesn't really get much screen time.
He's the crumb of diversity in
this
movie.
But he's great. He's great.
He is great. Like when he, well, we'll get to it in a second. So one of the eggs is about to hatch and you can see John's genuine enthusiasm for this project. He's been present for all the births, he says. And those little baby raptor squeals.
Come on then. He says it like 30 times.
Oh, it's so cute. Push.
It's
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
In this scene in the book, Hammond says that he's there for everyone because the new baby dinosaur's imprint on the first thing that they see.
Oh.
Is that an actual like scientific thing that happens?
There are some species that imprint on the very first thing they see, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I do think dogs kind of do that a little bit. Not like a full version, but dogs do that a little bit. Like, because I've had with me and other people that have consistently watched a dog when it was a puppy, it like is like my sister's in specific is like obsessed with me now because it remembers me when it was
apparently werewolves can imprint on little babies children.
But
sounds like Twilight. That's Twilight. Get out of there. We don't want that.
I know ducks will actually imprint because my friend took a class in high school where they had to like raise ducks and they had to make sure the duck was looking at them when it hatched.
So
the duck would imprint and would follow them around.
What did they do with the ducks?
I don't know. The goal was to keep the duck alive of the class. So
that's good. No cooking.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe when the class is over, you know.
Yeah. Take it to the home ec class.
You're hungry. All right, kids. Today we're learning how to butcher your own fowl.
Oh no!
No.
The hatchling vocalizations were based on various baby animals, including owls and foxes. Mm. And they wanted something that was raspy, as the adults would later make kind of raspy noises. So the sounds of the hatching baby dinosaurs were created by some very specific things. Crushing ice cream cones was the actual eggshell breaking.
Oh.
Squishing cantaloupe melon halves was the embryonic emergence.
Wow.
And goo smeared pineapple skin was apparently the baby dinosaur flesh cleansing. Also, baby dinosaur flesh cleansing is
that's a
phrase.
My favorite phrase you've ever said.
I mean, fair.
A flesh cleansing just sounds like Silence of the Lambs or something. I don't like that phrase.
It really does. Or like it could be in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I will cleanse your flesh by taking it off.
Exactly. We learned that the dinosaurs can't breed in the wild because all the dinosaurs are female. And the look, so this is what I was going to say about B.D. Wong, the look that he gives Ian Malcolm when Ian's like, how do you know they can't breed? And the look that he gives him, he's like, are you telling me that all female dinosaurs can breed? Like,
yeah, it's great.
The disdain.
He's just got that look of dumbass.
And he does that little thing with his pen where he like lifts it, like, really, man? Like, really? It's great.
So sassy. I love
it.
Ian has a lot of questions, Ian Malcolm, and it leads to one of the greatest blockbuster speeches ever when he talks about life will not be contained. Life finds a way. There's a lot more to it.
Finds a way.
Best line. Best
I have a story about this. So apparently my mock trial teacher from college or instructor told a story about this. His wife, he's a lawyer. His wife was also a lawyer, now a judge. But during one trial that she was doing, this movie had just come out. And so she opened her opening statement by saying, have you all seen Jurassic Park? And all the jury had. And so she made reference to that line, life finds a way. And I think she won the case.
Aww.
But she made reference to this movie. So this movie... And Spielberg helped her win her case.
Brilliant. I love that.
Honestly, that line goes with a lot of things. So it makes
Spielberg can add a legal scholar to his like.
Right.
He's got court experience, I guess.
Alan changes the subject and he's like, what species is this? And it is a velociraptor.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so Alan's like looking down at the baby raptor. He's looking. What is going through his mind right there?
I feel like he was like thinking about snapping his neck.
Oh, that's God.
So dark. That's not what I thought.
He loves dinosaurs. He hates kids.
No, but like,
this is a kid dinosaur.
A velociraptor.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Or he's like, can we fly that kid from Montana in?
I think he's thinking.
To feed it?
Yeah. I think he's thinking, how many are there and like, where are they? I think he's thinking in specific, like, that's not a good plan.
Yeah, because they already talked about how they're herd, like,
and how they work together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's lunchtime for the guests as well as for the dinosaurs. And John's detailing this delightful sea bass lunch they're in for from their chef Alejandro. Because Matt, what have they done?
They're not sparing any expense.
Not sparing any expense. And they witnessed the raptor's lunch of a whole cow. And that poor cow. Did you guys watch this
with subtitles?
Yes.
Okay, so the subtitle for this, when they're showing the cow, it's mooing in fear.
Aww.
Stop it.
Literally, if you watch it on Amazon and look at those subtitles, it's mooing in fear.
That is horrifying, but also like hilarious.
Poor cow. Muldoon then shows up and he has a healthy respect for the raptors. And he's like talking about how smart they are. And he talks about how they're learning. Like they're the one keeps trying the fence because the fence is electrified, but it keeps trying different spots in the fence because it's looking for weakness. So then they sit down to their sea bass and they talk, and it's very funny, the contrast between this cow being lowered into the raptor enclosure to be just mauled versus their delightful, nicely plated sea bass.
Which I noticed something crazy. It's only in front of Ellie. Did you notice this?
I didn't notice that.
It's weird. Maybe she doesn't want to eat it. Or, and everybody else finish. I don't know, but it's like only in front of her. Like,
well, because she does at one point look kind of like just
queasy.
Yeah. So maybe that's it. So they talk about the plans for the park, and Ian Malcolm brings up the lack of humility that is on display as he refers to it. He says they didn't earn the knowledge. They have no sense of responsibility. It's basically capitalism gone crazy.
He says one of like my favorite lines ever that I quote all the time. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're scientists. Didn't ask whether they should. They just sought to try to figure out if they could.
Yeah.
And then he says it didn't require the discipline to attain it. I love that line. That's a great line.
The ethical debate continues and he stands firm and Ellie kind of backs him up. But this is really where Spielberg reiterates, like, and he does this throughout the movie, that they're not monsters. They're just wild animals. They're just doing what wild animals do, which is going to go against what I will later argue when we talk about whether or not this is classified, whether or not you would put this in potentially a horror category. John is shocked to find that the only one on his side is the blood-sucking lawyer. We next meet John's grandchildren, Lex, who is a computer whiz, and Tim, a dinosaur obsessed kid, who have come for a visit as their mom is going through what sounds like kind of a messy divorce. It's time for the real tour to begin. They're going to go out into the park itself. So they split up into two groups, into the fancy electric driverless cars. And Matt, I know you said that Tim annoyed you, but I think when you were younger, he's freaking adorable because he's like, oh my God.
So cute.
Alan Grant.
He annoys me, I think, because he is me.
He's also like really smart and it's so cute. I love the way they film it, how he just keeps like following him. He like sits down and then he gets out of the car and he's like, wherever you're going, that's where I'll be. It's so cute. It's like a celebrity to him. So sweet.
Yeah, because he's like just so obsessed with dinosaurs. And here's this guy that, you know, is probably one of his like heroes, and he has him like at his mercy. So
not only that, he's questioning his theories.
Yeah, he's not afraid to be like, I don't see it.
I read this in this other book.
Yeah.
Lex says like, she said it'd be good if I sit with you. And then he looks at Ellie and she's and then he's like, okay, but guess what? She's not sitting with him.
I know.
No.
Spielberg, your continuity error. Come on.
But I think it's purposeful. I think he's like
it's on purpose. He's like, I don't want to do it.
He then kind of escapes from it. So it's Ellie, Ian, and Alan in one car, Gennaro and the two kids in the other car. Back in the control room, we meet Ray Arnold, played by Samuel L. Jackson.
I must say, he's kind of a random like actor to be put in this movie. It's not something I would have ever expected.
I mean, this is pre like superstardom.
Perfect though. It's perfect.
That's true. No, it's wonderful. It's just I would have never expected it with his career now. Like as we know.
For
like,
sure.
Who else would have been able to tell you to hold on to your butts with that? Just
right. So many good lines. So many good lines.
I hate that hacker crap. We learn that the tropical storm is possibly on its way. Now, here are a few things. We know that there's a T-Rex. We know that the raptors are really smart. We know that a tropical storm is possibly on its way. Maybe it's time to evacuate the island. I'm just saying. The tour, however, doesn't go quite to plan. Dinosaurs don't appear. There are vehicle glitches. In fact, the first dinosaur on the tour to not show up is the Dilophosaurus, which was my favorite dinosaur when this came out.
It's really good foreshadowing, too, because it's going to happen later. or soon.
John, back at the control room, gives Nedry a hard time about the glitches, and John gives his best, "I'm not mad, just disappointed," dad speech.
Mm-hmm. See, I thought they were actually related when I first watched this, because he calls him dad. He's like, dad. I thought they were actually related, and I thought that's kind of like why he was betraying him, because it's like he's mad at his dad. But no, he's just being snarky.
I feel like there's more about their relationship in the book. Like, I feel like Hammond actually cheats cheats Nedry out of some money. Like,
he's scummier in the book. So,
I mean, I also just hate Nedry. He is really scummy. Like,
Also his desktop.
I know. It's real gross.
But what's the actor that plays his name? What's his name?
Wayne Knight.
Yes. I mean, he's perfectly creepy and like almost grimy feeling. He's got that perfect, like,
he reminds me of Al from Toy Story 2.
Yes. He literally looks like him, sort of. Yeah.
All right. Muldoon shushes everyone as they see that the cars are approaching the T-Rex paddock, because all the cars have like cameras so the control room can see what's happening inside. So, of course, we're as excited to see the T-Rex as they are. I mean, I know I was like, oh my God, I want to see the T-Rex. But once again, she's a no-show. So they even try to lure her out by bringing out a goat. That poor goat. And Alan's like, you can't just suppress 65 million years of gut instinct. The T-Rex doesn't want to be fed. She wants to hunt.
Actually, based on modern science, we know that's probably not true.
Really? Tell us more.
They're more likely scavengers, is what I've read. So they do want to be fed.
They do want to be fed. They're like, just have the food in front of me, please, and thank you. The tour continues as Ian taps on the video the vehicle camera, saying, eventually you'll have dinosaurs on your dinosaur tour, right? Yes. And John is not impressed. He's like, I hate that guy.
Like, I hate that man. Yeah. It's so good.
That's one of my favorite lines in the entire movie, just his delivery. It's so deadpan, and you can feel it. You can feel the hatred he has.
Mm-hmm. And I love they're totally set up as these contrasting characters, even like to the way they're dressed. Like John Hammond is completely in white. Ian Malcolm is all in black. And
we never see Hammond's chest. We have a nice full view of,
I think also like just, you know, and like Malcolm has all kinds of objections to the park, and like he thinks about the ethical ramifications, where John is just kind of lost in the magic and the wonder of it all. And doesn't think about the ethical implications of it.
Which is the whole discussion to be had when discussing this is, do we have the right to bring dead extinct animals back to the living? Like, do we have that right to almost play God and like interfere with like the natural history of the world?
And that's super relevant, Taylor, because people are trying to do that with the mammoth right now.
Oh, yeah, they are. So it's just like a discussion. Like, what's the moral compass that we can follow for like this kind of situation?
I'm strictly on the no train on that. I mean, like, the mammoth's not going to survive in our current world.
No.
Absolutely.
It's not built for how we live now. Like, all of our bacteria, all of their bacteria, all of everything. It's just like, you're forcing an animal that doesn't know what's going on into a world that it's not built to live in.
Well, plus the U.S., like the world atmosphere was very different, I feel like, back during the Jurassic era and such than it is in today's society, right? Like the way the world is today.
This gives Ian the opportunity to explain chaos theory, as he says the T-Rex is the essence of chaos. And he talks about the butterfly effect. So if a butterfly flaps its wings in Beijing, we're going to say Beijing, I don't think it's Beijing, I can't remember exactly where, then it rains on the east coast of the United States. So like, that's kind of like chaos, that things that you don't see happening or you don't know are happening are affecting everything. He is so flirty with Ellie as he explains it to her. He's like touchy-feely, and like he's like holding her hair. I would be like, excuse me, boundaries, dude. I mean, it's Jeff Goldblum, but I still would be like, boundaries.
Okay, so when he's talking about all this before he does the whole hand test, where she says, dinosaurs eat man, woman inherits the earth. It's the best line.
It's so good. Just full of banger lines, my God.
And the way that Al looks at her when she says it is like, yeah.
Alan has seen something in the distance, and he becomes this kind of a living, breathing example of chaos theory when he hops out of the car, followed closely by Ellie. Muldoon, by the way, 100% right when he's like, we should have had locking mechanisms on the door. everyone's now left the cars. They've all stopped. And we see the start of Lex's crush on Alan. Like when she kind of like stumbles and he helps her up and she will not let go of his hand. She's just like
beaming up at him. She does it so well. Yeah. Her face is just like.
So they discover a park employee taking care of a sick Triceratops. And it's such an incredible scene. Ellie and Alan are overcome with emotion. Like they're actually crying like at one point. And when Alan like lays on the Triceratops and just feels it breathe, like
next crush moment part two.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Watching him. Yeah. So
sweet. And it's funny because I think at one point they talk about being out of a job and I think it's Ian Malcolm says, don't you mean extinct? But it's like, they don't care. Like they don't even care about the fact that their jobs have been rendered obsolete by this. They are just so enraptured by these animals. So Ellie chats with the vet. She's trying to help him figure out what's wrong with the trike and she ends up staying behind with him. And the storm is getting closer. They thought it might change course, but it doesn't. So Muldoon's
don't skip. That is one big pile of shit. Don't skip all that.
That's right.
And then when she digs through it.
And then tasty. He's like, she's very tenacious. And he's like, yes. And Alan's like, you have no idea.
And then he goes, you will remember to wash your hands before you eat anything. The way that he says it is the funniest delivery ever.
So the storm's on its way. Muldoon's like, we need to cut the tour short. And John's annoyed. He's not happy that his tour is not going according to plan. The island is getting pelted by these violent waves and Nedry's about to hatch his evil plan. He deactivates the park's security systems so he can get into the embryo storage room. But because of the storm, he needs to get out fast. His escape boat is about to leave. So he's like, come on, I had this plan. I have like 18, maybe 20 minutes, but he needs to hurry it up. And him fumbling through his lies to John and Ray, when he's like, I'm just going to go get a soda and I had some sweet stuff earlier. So now I need some salty stuff. So that was me trying to lie to my mom when I was a teenager.
Suspicious at all. I mean, that's how we all talk, right?
Ray has noticed that some of the security systems are going offline, but Nedry has already planted the seed that they should expect that as part of his upgrades that he's working on. Meanwhile, he is out there stealing babies as fences start shutting down all over the park. And Ray goes to Nedry's workstation to see if he can fix the issues. But he gets an you didn't say the magic word on the screen. Things quickly go from bad to worse. The phones are out and the vehicles have stopped right by the T-Rex paddock. So Ian has already mentioned that he has three kids and he is very clearly thinking like a dad. He's very concerned about them. They're pretty much fine. Like Lex is a little nervous, I think, but Tim is just playing with some of the equipment in their car, like the super cool night vision goggles. But when Gennaro says, are they heavy? Then they're expensive. Put them back.
I do love too. Oh, he's talking to him. He's talking to Malcolm about everything. And he's like, yeah, I love kids. And married occasionally.
I'm always on the lookout. It's time for the T-Rex to join. So we see water in two cups that are sitting in the cup holders in the vehicle. They start to ripple and we hear this distant thudding. The scene is like iconic, like that, the water ripple.
It's just very effective. It's a very effective way to like almost show the impending moment that's coming. Mm-hmm.
The choice to do it and then how like serious, how he's like, stop. Tim is like, stop everything. And then how they zoom in on it. It's so cool how they shoot it.
Tim puts the night vision goggles back on. He zooms in. He sees that the goat is now missing. So the goat that was there earlier to feed the T-Rex, now gone. And Lex, wide-eyed, says, where's the goat? And a bloody leg falls onto the sunroof.
Poor vegetarian.
And then we see the T-Rex claw wrapped around the no longer electrified fence. And we get our first glimpse of it as it chomps down on the goat. And it's like, hopefully that translates well.
And this is more or less the part where, what's his name, like runs out of the car and hides in the urinal or whatever.
Yes. And it's another iconic, which is Lex's, he left us, because she obviously brings that up later with Alan. Yeah.
I get the lawyer. He's justifiably terrified, like, but leaving the kids behind? Come on. Ian says, because Alan's like, where's he going? And another one of Ian's perfect lines, when you gotta go, you gotta go.
And because they don't know about the T-Rex yet. They think he actually, like, they like legitimately don't know where he's going.
Yeah, I don't think they've fully seen him.
They haven't seen the T-Rex. Yeah. The only inclination they have that something is wrong is when they see that the fence is wobbling because it's loose, because some of the lines have been cut. So they honestly don't know where he's going. So Malcolm probably honestly thinks, oh, he's got to take a shit.
I mean, I don't think that's the time to be doing that, though. Like, not running to me, you know, I got to take a shit right now. We're stuck and it's raining.
When you got to go, Taylor, you got to go.
I mean, shit yourself. I don't care.
He runs to the toilet and he passes by a sign that says no feeding, flash photography, or yelling, all of which happen in the moments leading up to this attack. This is when wires from the fence start snapping and the T-Rex is actually free. Alan is like, its vision is based on movement. We just need to freeze. But Lex and Tim aren't privy to his insight because they're in the other car. And she turns on a flashlight. And I would do the same thing. I'd be like, I want to see where this thing is. So I would turn on the flashlight.
Oh, I would not. I would
no?
not.
No?
No.
Oh, I 100% would. I would not.
I feel like it's a bear situation where you don't want it to see you. Like,
yeah.
This is why you would not last very long in a horror movie, Sherry, because you turn the lights on.
Oh, I would.
Wow.
Let's just see who's there. Oh, shit. You have a knife. Goodbye.
And Tim shuts the car door, and these two things attract the T-Rex. And the sounds of the T-Rex are intense. The roar was a combination of a male walrus, dog, penguin, tiger, alligator, and elephant.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. Well, it's a rad sound. So good.
It's so good.
So no turtles?
No turtles.
That's the other dinosaurs.
Yeah.
That's the raptors, right?
Oh.
I've heard that, like, I'm from other dinosaur readings that I've done over the years. T-Rex probably honestly made more of a chirping noise.
More really? Like the Dilophosaurus?
More like that. More like just like a chirp or a hoot is what I've read based on the more recent studies.
How would they know this? That's the one thing that always like fascinates me is like how paleontologists know these things. And I don't doubt them. I'm not like questioning that they.
But it's also another thing about like how do we know what they even look like? Because like looking at the skeleton, you can kind of guess. But the thing is, like, if you've seen a hippo skull, it looks nothing like what a hippo actually looks like.
Well, now I want to look up a hippo skull.
Look at what the hippo skull looks like, because it's got all these like weird protrusions and stuff. And you'd think it looks like horns and stuff, or like spikes or crests.
Don't like paleontologists today kind of suspect that dinosaurs actually have feathers?
Yeah.
Or feather like
dinosaurs? Yeah, they did. Yeah, they talk about that.
Whoa. That's a hippo skull.
Whoa.
That's not what a hippo looks like now, is it?
You're right. That like, looks insane.
Looking at the dinosaur bones and stuff that we have now, it's like just looking at this and what a hippo looks like and we know it looks like, that for me like conceptualizes like, what if dinosaurs literally look nothing like what we thought they were? What if a triceratops looked like just this big bulbous blob of a thing? No?
Maybe.
I really hope the tiny hands are true because that's all that matters to me.
Priorities.
Also, another thing about this scene that fascinates me is the whole if you don't move, you can't see us thing that's like kind of pervaded all of pop culture about T-Rexes, but like is not actually true. Like I remember seeing Jimmy Neutron. Like, yeah. In Jimmy Neutron, though, they brought that up where it's like they go to the past one episode and there's a T-Rex and Sheen's like, if you don't move, it can't see us. And Jimmy's like, Sheen, you know that's been disproven, right? And they're like, oh, run.
I feel like you still wouldn't be able to outrun a T-Rex, though.
Oh, absolutely not.
So the T-Rex starts attacking the kid's car. So Alan first grabs a flare and like is trying to get its attention and throws it, which works until Ian thinks that he's going to one-up Alan. And he grabs a flare and just starts running with it because they're just trying to distract the T-Rex. And the look on Alan's face though when he says hey to the T-Rex and then it roars at him, priceless.
Dumbass.
Priceless.
Yeah.
What I've read from on the more trivia, if you can't tell, I'm obsessed with this movie.
That's okay.
But I've read that like initially he was just gonna pull a Gennaro and run, but Jeff Goldblum's like, why don't we just make this a more heroic moment for him to make you like him more? So that's why he was kind of like doing the sacrifice play.
Oh,
I have read about the production of this film.
Interesting.
And it's definitely not him being stupid because he's like very smart. I just think he's he's trying to like help.
He's misguided. He doesn't know about. Yeah. He didn't understand what Alan's plan was.
Yeah,
yeah,
which was working.
It was working.
No, Alan's so smart. He is so casual about it too, the way he like waves it. And I'm like, God, what a badass. Like standing there like it's not a big deal. Okay.
Meanwhile, I would be lying on the ground in the fetal position crying. So the T-Rex starts chasing Ian before they crash into the thatched roof bathroom, knocking Ian out. But Gennaro fares even worse though, as he is devoured.
It is the funniest death, I must say, which is a phrase I don't use often or ever.
Gennaro is like Elvis. He died on the toilet.
Aw, oh, sad. But the way I think it's comical because the way the T-Rex looks at him is like, what is this thing? Like the face that it makes is the cutest, weirdly cute, like funny human-like face. Like what is happening here? Like he's I don't understand it.
Cup.
It's like he's what?
He's on the little egg cup.
Oh my gosh. I feel like it would be like a shark coming up to something and be like, what is this? I guess I'll bite it. All right. It's meat.
So who would you be in this situation? Would you be Alan? Would you be Gennaro? Would you be Ian?
I'd be the Ian, I think. I'd be trying to help but end up fucking it up or just completely ruining everything that Alan was doing.
Honestly, I'd be one of the kids just like shivering in terror in the car.
Me too.
Yeah, I think I'd be a combination. I think I would lean more towards Ian, but hopefully be a little braver, or just try to listen to Alan more and not do something stupid first. Yeah
they have this kind of weird like masculine competition thing kind of going on that's very subtle, but it definitely is there. So the T-Rex comes back. She's still hungry, apparently. It is a live human buffet. So it's probably, you know, as you said, Katie, she looks at Gennaro, like, what are you? And so it's probably like exotic food for her. It's very exciting. Yeah. And Alan grabs the kids. They start to descend into the paddock before the car comes crashing down. Ellie and Alan narrowly escape. Tim gets stuck in a tree inside the car.
Well, you forgot like the best, like when she, when I love it when the screen breaks and they're like on their backs. It's like the best. I'm like, this is why I want to be in movies, like shit like that. I want to do that. That looks so fun and scary. And they're so
like
good at it.
Squished into the mud and they're pushing back so on the glass.
It's a really good film moment. Like that just creates a lot of tension. It's like, oh my goodness, how would you rehandle yours? Like, I don't think I'd have the strength to like.
That slides like an inch. You're like done.
Yeah, exactly.
Mouth is so huge. Yeah. Scary.
Muldoon and Ellie decide to take a gas-powered Jeep and they're going to go out and rescue everyone.
Wait, we haven't addressed the fact that there's a giant gap between where the T-Rex habitat is and the actual like path that the Jeeps are on.
What? Oh, like it's like deep. Like
how does the T-Rex get from down there all the way up there?
I'm guessing there's a jumper.
She's a jumper.
It's actually a hippogriff, so he just flew down.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so rad. Right. He's like, let me just sprout my wings for a sec, guys. It's okay.
Detachable wings.
We've already mentioned they have feathers, so it seems appropriate. Oh,
there you go.
It does. It honestly does.
So Ray says he can't get the system back online without Nedry, which is unfortunate because Nedry has just crashed his vehicle and got it stuck in the mud as he's heading to the dock with his stolen dinosaur embryos. And we hear this kind of chirping as he tries to extract the vehicle. And we finally see our first Dilophosaurus. And he's so cute. Or she, I guess, is a she. Well, we don't know. We'd later find out that the dinosaurs have been breeding, which leads Nedry to underestimate the Dilophosaurus. He turns his back on her before she squawks and she basically flaps her little crests before spitting some goo at him. And I almost did my Dilophosaurus impression, but I'm not going to do it.
Do it now. Yeah, you must.
Hold
it. It's so bad. It's so bad.
We'll all hold our breath while you do it.
I will mute myself.
Me too.
Me too.
All right. I don't even know if I can do it now. It's been years. Okay.
Sherry, I wish we could put the video clip of that.
I wish this wasn't like an audio platform because it needed whole visual.
Oh my god.
The head tilting to the side, the little hand gestures.
The blush that arrived immediately. Yep.
Why were you not cast to play the Dilophosaurus?
What a disservice. What a disservice to the world.
I could have had a totally different life.
Oh, man.
Well, you know what? Maybe I do have a YouTube page that I never use. Maybe I will like edit that part out and put
just that one clip.
Just that one clip.
That's the teaser.
Oh my gosh. Wait, you need to do somehow like do a boomerang of yourself doing that. Because that can be like a part of, that's got to be a part of something.
It's like such an iconic branding moment for the podcast, Sherry.
Right? Everybody's gonna be like, oh, now we know who this girl is. Let's go.
Right. Let's find out more. Keep in mind, I've been doing that since I was 17.
Now we can see into his soul.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So she spits some goo at him. He manages to get back in the car before she attacks again. And his little Barbasol can of dino embryos is lost to the mud, which could have been a perfect sequel setup, but they went in a completely different direction.
I mean, at this point, it's 20 minutes after he said, I'll be there in 15 minutes. So.
Yeah,
the boat's gone.
A hot minute. Mm-hmm.
The boat's already gone. He would have failed anyway.
He's such a jerk too. Like at that one point where he hits the signpost like this way to the dock or whatever, and he like spins it around because he's just such an ass. And apparently, Wayne Knight, he totally was down for Nedry to die, but he wanted it to be on screen and more graphic. He's like, this guy deserves to die.
That tar stuff must be the worst. Like it looks so gross. The way they make it look is just so like it looks like gooey cement.
It's thick. Or something.
Yeah,
it's not like gross. It's not like thin venom. It's just like gloppy, sticky goo.
Yeah,
I think I read that it was like they used a paintball mechanism, like a paint gun mechanism, to shoot it, and that it was KY jelly with some other things mixed in.
That makes sense.
Oh. Yeah.
Alan, at this point, has to rescue Tim, who's still stuck in the car that fell and is resting in a tree. Tim is all embarrassed that he threw up, but, like, really? Who wouldn't?
I love how immediately he's like, no, but nobody cares that you threw up. We have to get you out of
here. Yeah, exactly.
It's so great.
It wouldn't be a rescue if there wasn't more excitement. The car starts falling out of the tree as they climb down, and they manage to get to the ground. The car lands on top of them, but luckily that glass in the roof has already been like,
well,
not back anymore.
In the car again. My favorite when he says that is so cute. And then when they're above, like before they go down, he's like trying to help him. He's like, this is impossible. The kid is so, this is like his scene, man. This whole scene is like all Tim.
I feel like both kids are, their acting is so incredible.
Yeah.
Ellie and Muldoon show up. They see the site of the attack and they both find different parts of Gennaro. I think this is part of Gennaro. I think this was too.
Yeah. Oh, God. Gross.
Before finding the semi-conscious Ian, who is still quipping away, because that's what he does, with, remind me to thank John for a lovely weekend.
Do we chance move?
Seriously. He's so quotable.
Ellie finds the other car, but she's reassured to see footsteps walking away. How does Ellie get down there?
And then back
I think they must drive. They must drive down there. There must be like a pathway or something that we're not seeing.
But like, if you look at it, like, when Ian's in the Jeep, he's next to the other tour van. So
I don't know. Let it lie. Still perfect.
Yeah, right.
I'm like,
this movie's
good.
Perfect.
It's
There's no good. Error there. There's no continuity error. What are we talking about? It's perfect.
It's perfect.
It's the 90s. There's clearly not a problem.
They need to hurry back to Ian, however, as he hears impact tremors in the water-filled T-Rex footstep in the mud, which is just perfect. And when he's like, come on. So they start driving away. It is one of the best chase scenes ever as the T-Rex just keeps coming after them. Why does the T-Rex give up? Is he just like, or she's just like, they're too far ahead. Yeah.
The car speeds away.
So it's just like, I'll just take a detour. I'll find some more humans.
I didn't really want to eat them anyway. It's okay. They can, I'm already full.
Well, plus the T-Rex sees something more interesting that's easier to access. I'm sure like you would take the easier option.
You know what? I already had some lawyer today. I don't think I need any of the mathematician.
I don't need some sarcastic asshole.
isn't Ellie screaming shit over and over again during this? It's so funny. And the way she's doing it, like, it's so funny.
It's very touching. There's the point where it's like they're about to get bit, and then Malcolm like gets in the way of Ellie.
Yeah. Think they'll have that on the tour? Love that.
Yeah. He never stops quipping.
Which is why I think he's necessary, because if you take that out, this would be a different movie.
It's a little too melodramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Alan takes the kids to sleep up in a tree. They're high off the ground. And in the tree, they see a herd of brachiosaurs in the distance. And Lex is terrified. But Alan's like, they're not monsters. They're just animals. He's getting a little paternal now. Like, he seems like he's changing his opinion on kids, perhaps. And Tim breaks out his best dinosaur jokes, which leads me to ask, what is your favorite dad joke?
I let too many of these off on a daily basis. I'm not a dad,
so. I don't really have many dad jokes because I have good humor.
Me too.
Do you, Taylor?
I do, Sherry, actually.
Here's the only one I can think of at the time. A priest, a rabbi, and three dudes walk into a bar. Three dudes walk into a bar. You think the second two would abduct?
Nice.
That's my best dad joke that I can think of at the moment.
All right. You want to hear mine?
Yes.
What did one snowman say to the next snowman?
Gosh, what?
Smells like carrots.
Oh my gosh.
I love it.
That's cute.
That's a good one. That's a very good one.
Thank you.
I feel like very, very punny things fall into that realm too. So anything with a pun always makes me happy. Oh, also we missed the Tim line. Sorry, I'm like obsessed with these kids. They're going in the tree. She's like, I don't mind him. He's like, yeah, well, you weren't in the last one. It's so good. Gold.
Back at the visitor center, Ellie and John have this heart-to-heart over ice cream, and he talks about his history with his little flea circus. They have clown fleas and fleas on parade. That just sounds gross to me. Like,
it sounds disgusting.
Ellie calls him out and is like, it's all this still the same thing. You've just created an illusion. You've never really had control of this park. And she admits that she was overwhelmed and blown away, but now the people that they care about are out there in danger.
Also, she's not nearly close enough to that ice cream to get a scoop of it.
No. I thought that too. I think that every time I always want to rewind and be like, how did you reach it?
No, it's she's on the opposite end of the table. She's
not, and it's a big table.
She's not reaching.
Yeah.
Nah. Y'all overthink the smallest of things.
One I'm going to notice because it's food related. So I'm going to notice.
True. I'm going to talk about the Jell-O when we get to the Jell-O.
Jell-O.
Morning breaks and Alan and the kids wake up to find a Brachiosaurus visiting them for breakfast. And Tim is so cute when he's like, it's a Veggisaurus, Rex, a Veggisaurus. Because she's still freaking out a little bit. And then she's like, oh, this dinosaur is so cute. And just as she gets up enough nerve to touch it, it sneezes on her.
Poor Lux.
These kids go through it.
And then when they're walking away, I am just obsessed with their relationship, I think. Because then when they're walking away, he's like, great, now she'll never try anything new. Like, it sounds like he's like a dad or something. It's so funny. I love it.
Alan finds broken shells. We learn that the dinosaurs have been breeding. Once again, Ian was right, which I love. At one point, he's like, I hate being right all the time.
Mm-hmm. Why does he sniff the eggshells?
I ask that every time because I don't get it. I'm like, this is your one weird quality and I'm not a fan.
He's designing a clone line and he's inspiration for new things.
Oh, man. It's going to be in the gift shop.
Also, we forgot the little foreshadow drop of the fact that Lex is a hacker because he keeps saying she's a computer nerd. She's like, I'm a hacker.
Yeah, I prefer hacker. It. Yeah, that's right. So back at the control room, Ian tells Ray to reboot the system so they can bring it back online, which I feel like, I mean, I know they have to do that, but that would be terrifying. So we should definitely listen to Ray when he says, hold on to your butts.
Boop. Nobody did it.
I did it.
He's going to head to a maintenance shed to complete the reboot. He's like, 3 minutes, the power will be back on. Mm-hmm. Likely story.
Bye.
Yeah. So Tim, Lex, and Alan see some Gallimimus
running. Ooh, I got to talk about this.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know. Long story short, I'm semi sort of friends with a few comedians because of the pandemic happening and me watching their Zooms live and sliding into those DMs, you know. Greg Barris is great. He's this comedian that's in LA, actually, for Matt. Ooh. And he's hilarious. And he has a whole song that sounds like it's like 90s or 80s called Gallimimus. There's a whole like pose and he based it off of this scene and how they run and it's everything.
Oh,
you need to like find that on Instagram and download the music because it's great. It's
really I fun. Love that. And we see why these dinosaurs have appeared and are flocking towards them.
Flocking like they're evading a predator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're flocking this way.
Even like after everything that's happened, Ian, I mean, Alan is still so like fascinated. He's like, they're flocking like birds. And he's like, I knew it. But seriously, how much can these poor kids take? The T-Rex shows back up on the scene and is taking out these poor little dinosaurs. These poor kids, they're going to need therapy for years.
And the way I love the fascination while he's watching, and then he's like trying to pull him away from it.
Yeah. So funny. Oh, he actually has to grab him and lift him.
Yeah.
Sattler and Muldoon decide to head to the shed when Ray doesn't return in time, but they're armed. They're ready. This is where John is a little patronizing to Ellie when he's like, it should be me going. And she says,
yeah,
look, we can discuss sexism in survival situations later. And I may have actually cheered.
Oh, it's so good.
Ugh. They're heading to the shed and they see that the raptors have escaped and Muldoon is a total mood.
Ugh.
They get close to the shed and Ellie's like, it's right there. And he's like, we're being hunted. And she's like, what?
At that moment, do you think he knows he's going to die?
I don't probably think so.
I think he might.
I feel like he knows it.
I think he has a weird mix of being cocky and also understanding these animals to know that he doesn't have a chance, but he does have a gun. So I don't know if he fully thinks that he can get out of it, but
I mean, I think he suspects, like, I think he knows like something's gonna happen and it's kind of out of his control. Like, I mean, we're talking about like wild beast animals that no one knows the behaviors of, really, other than like theories based off of, you know, fossils that are millions of years old. Like, there's no way to predict how these animals are going to behave.
See, I feel like I think he thinks there's a chance, but I don't think he knows that he's going to die.
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
He doesn't know, like, I don't think he has the awareness that Alan does, like how they hunt and how they kind of hunt in packs. So I think mm-hmm. he's just focused on that one in front of him. And he probably thinks he has a pretty good chance of taking it out.
Which I think is interesting because he's the one who's like seen them in real life.
Yeah. And he knows how smart they are.
And he's a hunter. So he should.
But you know, with where they're keeping that one when they're feeding it and stuff, I don't think he knows about like coming in from the sides and like how they work together. I don't think he knows about that.
Ellie takes off and she has some moves.
I love it.
Jumping over the like logs. She's like swinging from like tree branches. Damn. And she makes it to the shed, which is great.
Also, can we talk about how she's not out of breath? I know you're in shape, girl, but she gets there and she's just like, yeah, I'm here. Like, there's not even breathing. I'm like, what? Did you just run?
Maybe she jogs every single day. Maybe.
Maybe.
Endurance for days. Walking around all the bones, you know?
Endurance. Alan and the kids make it to an electric fence that Alan tests, but plays a mean trick on the kids when he's like,
I feel like that's the ultimate dad joke right there.
100%.
But how bad is he going to feel later?
Yeah, right. And Tim thinks like it's hilarious, whereas like Lex, not so much.
Yeah, that was great. So cute.
So they hear a dinosaur roar and they start to climb, but you know they need to get up that fence and back down it fast as Ellie is about to turn the power back on.
Dramatic irony.
Oh,
it's just I love so this. Good.
The quick cuts are so fun.
The power is turned on indeed as they're almost down the fence, but they get that little warning light go on. But Tim doesn't quite make it off and he is blown off of the fence.
Ah, poor Sparky.
I also feel like it's a little unrealistic to believe that this little child is not going to have any issues from this electrocution. Like, these things are designed to keep dinosaurs of all sizes contained.
I mean, he will. His ears are bleeding. He has like problem. Like, his hands are messed up. We don't know what's going on in the brain yet.
His hair's standing up.
Yeah.
I mean, I just imagine like one of those lights that attract bugs and mosquitoes at night, and then like they get zapped by them and they die instantly. That's what this little boy is on this electric fence.
Yeah.
I think he's thrown off so quickly that he doesn't manage to get like too much of the current through him, is my theory.
And it's only like a little bit of his hands, like his feet and stuff are covered.
Also, he wasn't grounded technically. I looked this up. He wasn't grounded. So technically he wouldn't have even been electrocuted. Like, as long as he didn't touch the ground, or I think as long as his knees didn't touch the fence as well, he would have been fine.
Oh, because it doesn't create a circuit.
Yeah, it doesn't.
All right.
Like, he would have lived. Like, this it's actually unrealistic to say that he would have died from this.
Okay, he's yeah. still the little mosquito bug going towards the electric.
It does take a while. It does take a while for him to come back. I love it's so scary, and I love how he's like he's not breathing, and Lex is just like bawling, and then they have that cool shot where it's like just their feet, kind of, and like the brush or the plants or whatever. Oh, so scary.
Back at the little maintenance shed, Ellie is being stalked by raptors and manages to escape. She's like, oh, Ray, or Mr. Arnold, I think she calls him. Yeah. And it's just his severed arm.
Mm-hmm. Why was it just like in there? Like waiting.
It's just hanging there, yeah.
Also, why is she limping?
I ask this every time. Is it something to do with the flashlight that hit her in the leg or something?
I don't think so.
That happened. I mean, I think the flashlight or something that she's dragging.
If you've ever been hit in the leg with a scooter, you know that hurts, but it's like, it doesn't hurt enough to make you limp.
Maybe she exhausted all of her leg muscle when she did her running and jumping moves.
No,
and
I mean, that didn't even make her breathe hard. So
it's true. It's true. Well, maybe her cardio is really good, but her like her muscle strength is not.
Maybe she's feeling like, you know what? It's too easy for me to be a badass and avoid these dinosaurs. You got to give them a fair chance to eat me.
Maybe.
Bryce Ellis Howard had to run in heels. So you have to give Ellie a little bit of a, she's got to give the dinosaur a chance.
Mm-hmm. Remember when how Alan said raptors hunt. So we've talked about it. They basically, one will distract somebody basically right ahead. And then the other two will like come in from the side and flank their victim. Muldoon figures it out, but not fast enough. And he does manage to say what is probably, despite all of his iconic lines, his most iconic line. Anybody want to deliver it?
Love a girl.
That was good. That was good.
Sorry, the quote on so many college grad caps I've seen over the years.
Also, when I first met my sister's husband, I made him this really cool shirt that's like a perfect image of like the raptor peeking out in his face, and it says clever girl, and he's like, I'm gonna wear this all the time. I'm like, yes, you are.
But also, like, had he not delivered that last banger of a line, he would have had a little bit more time to rotate and pop it off.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But I mean, you gotta have
he needed that line.
I think he realizes, he's like, the face is right here, I'm done, goodbye.
Famous last words. Good job. You gotta have that epic death scene.
Tim has been resuscitated by Alan, and apparently the young actor that plays Tim said counts that as his first kiss, because Sam Neill was so actually cute. Not going to try and make like mouth to mouth contact, but they weren't able to make it look realistic, and so it's his first kiss.
I mean, if your first kiss could be Sam Neill, why would you not count
that? I would count it.
Right? I know. Also, like, talk about delivery for this kid. I'll just talk about him forever. But when he wakes up and the first thing he says, 3, because he's counting. It's so cute.
Oh my God.
He's like the young Malcolm with the comedy. I love it.
So they make it back to the visitor center, and Alan leaves them to look for the others. And they get to feast on all kinds of sugary goodness.
Love this scene. I love
every child's dream, honestly.
But like,
the jello.
Oh yeah, you had some comments on it, right?
There are certain things in film and television that I've always wanted to eat. Krabby Patty, tubby custard, tubby toast, the candies from Jimmy Neutron. This jello, this green jiggly jello that Lex has, that she's shaking in fear, and this jello is just jiggling, has been on my list of things I wanted to eat ever since I first saw this movie. I don't know why. I don't particularly enjoy green gelatin. I'm more of a red jello kind of guy or a blue jello kind of guy. But this green jello, my God, it looks so appetizing. Out of all the
things. It looks perfect.
It does look like it'd be a good like table, lime, I bet. Yeah.
Out of all the things on that table, I want to eat that green jello. I don't care about the cake. I don't care about like the fruit and the veggies. I want that jello.
Sometimes jello just hits the spot. What can you say?
By sometimes, you mean like once every 10 years.
Yes, because it's about as often as I
Now, she sees this raptor silhouette behind Tim, and you just see her jello raised and just trembling, and her eyes are just like, she just looks so terrified.
Can we talk about the shot composition, please?
Sure.
I gush over the shot composition every time, because it's like, you see the painting, and then the shadow just matches up with it, and it's like, oh, whoever was like the DP for this, or like whoever composed this shot, if it was Spielberg or the DP, like, oh, I'm just gushing over how beautiful that was done.
It's so perfect because you see that background first, and then you see that silhouette come in, and it like just matches up, and it goes from like first like Tim's face to her face, and then to the silhouette, and it's a perfect shot. You're right.
So good.
So they run to the kitchen, and this kitchen scene,
the best scene of the movie,
incredible. Mm-hmm. So two of the raptors follow them to the kitchen. We learn that the raptors have figured out how to open doors significantly right after Ellie says, we're fine, yeah, unless they've learned how to open doors.
Which, I feel like it's a bit of like a plot device just to like create the tension. Like, of course they can open doors, but realistically they cannot. Yeah. I don't think they would learn to open doors that quickly.
No. They're smart, yeah. Taylor.
You know what?
They're very smart.
You can believe that, Sherry, if you want, but...
And I love their little, like, when she's asking, she's like, is it meat eating? And they're really quiet and, like, whispering to each other. And then how she says it's inside is so good. She's so afraid.
Going on the Velociraptor thing and the opening the doors. When I was in first grade, we had to do, like, weekly, like, typed out reports on, like, any topic of our choosing. And, like, one of the things I chose was Velociraptors because of this movie, and I loved it. And one of the things I wrote was Velociraptors were smart. They knew how to open doors. I distinctly remember this.
I love that.
And then remembering it, like looking back at it later, it's like, wait a minute. That was just for the movie.
I'm sure the teacher thought that was cute thing to write as a little boy.
Oh, no, my teacher hated me because I wouldn't stop talking. So. And now I talk for a living. Ha.
There you go.
Joke's on you, Mrs. Mackey.
And like, even just like this, like you see the reflection of the raptors, something like through the like shiny stainless steel of the cabinets. And when the one stands up and like calls to the other, it's so creepy.
I just loved in this scene, the moment whenever you like, you see the reflection of them, like, in the reflection of like the door or whatever, and then it's probably clearly a reflection, but also it's such a good moment how like it's clever,
it's done, it's so well,
clever. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
Also, I feel like this scene has all the markings of a good slasher chase scene
and a good like relationship, because she does stuff to distract, which is like a total sister, like,
yeah,
I love you a lot thing. I would not do this otherwise situation.
So they manage to escape and they meet up with the adults before they head to the control room to finish the reboot, which thank goodness for Girl Hacker, because she manages to turn the system back on just in time as the raptors are trying desperately to get in.
I think this is my one disappointed in Ellie moment, because instead of just pulling the gun, she flips it.
I think this is my one disappointed in Tim moment, because she's like, I can't reach it. You can't hold it by yourself. Tim, pick up the freaking gun and give it to her.
All like, he does is just tap on the back of Lex's chair.
You just had like a horrifying moment with your sister, but come on, let's go.
You know what? You got to give him a break. He was electrocuted.
Like, I know.
His brain isn't true. Firing.
He also was very smart and like made the raptor go into the freezer. So he's got some points still.
So this allows them to call for help. And in fact, I think, what does he say? What does Alan say when he calls John on the phone?
Tell him to send in like the goddamn helicopters or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, well, and he also says, Mr. Hammond, the phones are working.
That's like, yes, that's it. Yes.
Really? I didn't know.
They still need to get out of the control room. So they go up into the ducts.
Wait, it's the phones work. I had to correct myself. I think it's the phones work. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Up into the ducts they go. The raptors are still tracking them, and Lex almost falls to her death before they pull her back up.
I love that.
Also, more about framing again. When you see the raptor and it's got the DNA letters on it, like,
yeah,
projected on it.
Yes. Like, so cool. Ooh. So cool.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Oh, smart. Very smart people.
They come out of the ducts into the lobby of the visitor center, and they have to climb down the dinosaur bones. But the bones start to detach. Everyone starts tumbling to the ground. And of course, the raptors enter the room. So things don't look too good for our heroes, but just as one of the raptors is about to pounce, in comes the true hero of the movie, the T-Rex.
The badass, big-ass T-Rex.
Yeah.
See, whenever I watched this as a kid, I felt like the T-Rex was intentionally saving them.
Yeah, me too. That's I was like, thanks, bud.
And then when, in the, as we see on your Zoom background, when the banner falls, it's like a video game victory screen.
Yes. Gosh. It's so rad.
So it's like, the best, best shot. The T-Rex won in the end. Hooray.
And yeah, like the raptors are just jumping all over it, but the T-Rex is like, no, no.
Like, bitch, get off my back.
They run out of the visitor center. They hop in the car that John Hammond is driving, which arrived really at just the right time. And Alan says, Mr. Hammond, after careful consideration, I've decided not to endorse your park.
And then he says, like, me too, or something, right? Yeah.
So they make it to the helipad, and my heart breaks a little bit for John as he looks on and he's just in shock. Like, at all of this that he has dreamed of has, like, just been destroyed. And Alan just kind of takes his arm and, like, leads him into the helicopter. The movie ends. Everyone's safe in the helicopter. Alan is surrounded by the kids and Ellie is looking lovingly on. So really all this is about, the whole movie is just about Ellie trying to convince Alan to have babies.
Which, like, they don't, though.
I know.
What happened between them?
I don't know.
He needs to be better.
And honestly, I bet you it was a kid thing, because she has a kid later with that guy.
That's right.
Or was it one of those things where it's like, they've just been through this. They're two closest friends. They've been through this just traumatic experience together. They just can't do it together anymore.
Well, I can imagine they would need therapy after an event like this.
Yeah. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the movie. So what stood out for you other than the things that we've talked about? Obviously, this is a horror movie podcast. And I would argue that while this would not stand up as a horror movie, it has horror movie elements. I could argue that it's, well, I know, Matt, you've got some theories on this, so I'll actually just let you.
I've said before, this is like squarely in the creature feature thing. Like, it's definitely a creature feature, which is a subgenre of horror, as we know. So like,
that's true.
And there's so much in it that is like horrifying, like just Gennaro getting chomped in just completely torn in half, like Muldoon getting pounced, the kitchen slasher scene. It's like a very tame horror, I would say. Like,
yeah.
It's very PG-13. It's very much made for the masses. It's not like, it's not what you would consider your, like the general public, the general non-horror loving public would probably see this as more of just like a sci-fi adventure movie. But on also, like, I've watched this on TV before, and like, they will classify it as horror in like the description. So I definitely consider this like baby's first horror movie.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, it's a gateway horror movie.
God, mm-hmm. It's a gateway drug into creature features.
Right?
Yeah. Because they do cut away for every death, when if it was like horror, they would
see it. Yeah, Gennaro's the only one you actually see die, right?
You don't even really see it. You just see it.
Almost more as like a suspense thriller like movie than an actual horror movie, with just a few horror elements like sprinkled in there to add a little bit more of suspense and like that get your adrenaline running kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I understand, like, I believe it's very, you can make the justified argument that it is definitely horror. I'm just more on the sense that it's more thriller suspense for me than anything, with a little bit of action and sci-fi in there.
I'm going to give my argument as to why I think it's horror/gateway horror. So when you look at horror movies, there are certain set pieces that are kind of in a horror movie. So they're in the dark, they're in the rain. So much of this movie, so much of the scary stuff that happens in the dark, in the rain. And if you think about the scene where you first see that T-Rex, if you saw it in different lighting, if you saw it in the middle of the day, would it be as scary? Probably not. The raptors stalking their victims, like, to me, is just pure slasher. You look at the fact that it is released by Universal, which is home of the classic monster movies, and it carries over a lot of those tropes. So you've got the mad scientists, but you've also got that kind of Frankenstein sense of like this scientist who creates something that they can't control. But they think that they're bigger than, you know, the scientist basically tries to play God, and things go very, very badly. So that's kind of where, like, you know, they bring in that kind of idea. And even Steven Spielberg said that he wanted to make a really good sequel to Jaws. And that the actual quote from Steven Spielberg is, "I have no embarrassment in saying that with Jurassic Park, I was really just trying to make a good sequel to Jaws on land. It's shameless. I can tell you that now." But Jaws is 100% a horror movie. Yeah. So to me, this was like, we're going to take this horror movie, this monster movie, creature feature. We're going to tame it a little bit, make it more accessible. I think he does this thing where he balances this wonder and awe with horror and terror really, really well. And that's just kind of, that's my take on it anyways.
I mean, this is clearly the most reliable source, but according to the good old Wikipedia, it is classified as a science fiction action film. So Sherry, you're wrong.
I'm cutting everything Taylor has said out of the episode.
Hold on. Wait until I can go into it and like edit that. I'm going to go into Wikipedia right now.
See? And
edit this. But that'll be... Okay.
So it just depends on whether or not Taylor's edited it back by the time that you listen to the episode.
Or if Wikipedia allows the edit to be like permanent.
Anything else about the movie?
I mean, I think it's going to go down as a classic. Give it another few years and I think it's going to be like viewed up as one of those movies.
I feel like it already is.
It already is. It already is.
Is it...
Taylor, what's going on over there? Are you okay?
I guess I needed like another 10.
Do you touch a fence, Taylor?
Taylor, it's almost 30 years old.
You know what? That makes me feel old because that means I'm almost 30 years old.
Oh, shut.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Katie. So body count. How many people died?
Oh.
The lawyer, the guy in the beginning.
Joffrey.
Nandri.
Dr. Arnold or Mr. Arnold?
Yeah, Mr. Arnold. Dennis Nedry.
Oh, what's the hunter?
Muldoon.
Muldoon.
Mm-hmm. Five. So five. Yeah.
Do we count and a goat all the and dinosaurs cow. That died?
Because
the Gallimimus dies.
Oh, the goat. The goat. That's true. Gallimimus.
The goat dies.
Yeah. Five van human dies. Deaths. Lots of cars die.
The cow.
Oh, the cow.
The mooing fear.
How many scaredy cat screams would you give it? So on a scale of 1 through 5, what would you rate this movie?
2.
Oh.
Shut up. You would not rate it a 2.
As terror? It's a 2.
No.
That's not what it means.
No, oh. No. It's not about how scary it is. It is. Just how much you like the movie. It's an overall rating.
Out of 5?
Yeah.
10.
Okay, that is better.
It's a solid 4 out of 5, probably.
From 2 to 10.
He says wearing a Jurassic Park shirt.
Yeah, right.
And having bugged Sherry to do this episode for ever since I first guessed it on it.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah, probably 5. Yeah.
And Taylor, you said
a 4 out of 5.
Taylor's having a problem.
We respect your opinion and your right to be wrong.
Listen, just because I'm perfect, don't be a hater, okay?
Just because you're perfect?
Absolutely. I make my opinions are always correct. Like, hello.
You're perfect, except your opinion of Jurassic Park, Taylor.
Mister. I gave it a 2 out of 5.
And we all love Wikipedia.
I thought it was the scariness factor, okay? It has been a couple of weeks since I recorded an episode of this podcast.
Fair.
I'm like a robot since I recorded an episode of this podcast.
So I'm a robot. Taylor's perfect.
Clearly.
I'm the Malcolm of the group. I bring the comedy.
There you go. Sherry's the John Hammond. She's orchestrating everything.
Oh, I'm the Dilophosaurus. Oh. Clearly.
Sherry's the Dilophosaurus.
I'm the Dilophosaurus.
Boomerang okay, so, to come. Boomerang yeah. to come.
So, you know, Sherry's favorite dinosaur is Dilophosaurus. What about y'all? What is your guys' favorite dinosaur?
Oh, mine is a raptor, actually.
Oh, that's such a cliche.
I know, Taylor. But I don't care. I don't care.
I'll say the Brachiosaurus, maybe, because it just looked very gentle.
Cute.
Yeah.
Gentle giant.
Yes.
So basic of you,
wow,
Taylor.
Okay, Sherry.
You're such a basic bitch.
You know what? I'm like,
hey. Taylor's like, I'm never coming back on this podcast.
We see him leave the Zoom.
Okay, this has been great. Bye.
Matt, did you say yours is a raptor as well?
Yeah, it's still a raptor. Like, although admit, like now we know that velociraptors were like the size of a turkey.
Yeah.
and feathery, but they like
be very intimidating.
There were big raptors though. There's the Utah raptor was like sad. 10 feet tall. Deinonychus was about 6 feet tall. So like there are raptors that looked like ostensibly looked like the ones in JP. So they're still pretty cool. Like they can still bite you and come at you like whoosh.
I like them because they're smart. That's why I like them. Yeah.
But they can't open a door.
Prove it. Prove it.
Yeah, prove it. Well, go back in time.
Perks, so once I know for sure, I will report footage of them not opening a door.
Perfect. Perfect.
Is it just going to be a land of brachiosauruses and Wikipedia and judgment?
Wow. Oh, judgment. Gosh, this is a hate crime.
That was hate how much you hate Jurassic Park.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for coming on to talk about Jurassic Park with us today. Tell us where we can find you.
I am on Instagram and Twitter under my first initial T and my last name, R-E-U-T-M-A-N. You might need to add a 93 because that's the year I was born, but I can't remember because I never give up my Twitter or Instagram handles. So,
oh, okay then.
I feel like we're being treated to some forbidden knowledge here.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm very, very popular, actually. I have 10 followers, okay?
Oh, God, a whole 10?
I'm just blowing it up.
Teach me your secrets. You can find me at my personal one is the Woodsy Ninja on Instagram and Matt_Fern on Twitter. I also have my own podcast, which is Believe in Overwatch League. It's just BLEAV and OWL. I also run the Twitter for Finding Founders, which is at Finding a Founder. And I just took a job doing social media for DC Comics. So follow all the DC Comics.
That's so cool.
Ones.
Oh my gosh. Are you going to get like free stuff?
I hope so. But like, I have no more room for free DC stuff because I have so much DC stuff already.
Do you get to meet Batman?
I get to tweet for Batman.
Batman's my favorite, Sherry. Batman's my favorite. Oh my God.
I get to tweet for Batman. So although I don't get to meet him, I get to put the words in his mouth.
That makes you Batman.
Oh my God, that does make me Batman.
Mind
Whoa, I just
alone.
Fulfilled a childhood dream. I got to be Batman and I didn't have to lose my parents.
There you go.
Oh, why did you do it?
Katie, where can we find you?
Okay, I have a lot of things. See, I'm on Instagram. It's annoying, but it's at Katie Sings Though, since I sing. That's why I'm in New York and why I'm doing it all the time. And I'm on Twitter. I think it's Katie_usually. I also have a podcast opposite of Sherry's. It's about Schitt's Creek. So if you like Schitt's Creek, please listen and tell everybody. It is called Schitt's Simply the Best, the podcast. Very proud of that title. Came up with that. We are on Instagram under that and then on Twitter under Schitt's Simply the Best Pod. And I think we're on almost everything, but at least Apple and Spotify.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today. You can catch us on Twitter at @CatScaredy and on Instagram at @ScaredyCats the podcast. Subscribe wherever you find podcasts. Check our YouTube page eventually for the boomerang of me doing my Dilophosaurus impression. And don't forget to let us know what you think by leaving us a review. Please don't review my Dilophosaurus impression. Until next time, stay scared.